Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
What a show, Mike. I thought this was one of the better Dynamites overall. I usually don't start with kind of my macro impression of a show, but bookended with two big championship matches, the TBS tournament match in the middle, some good mic work, a sit-down in your Serena Deeb, a strengthened women's division in general, getting more segments. I thought this was just one of the better start-to-finish Dynamites. Where are you on this, Mike?
Yeah, I'm in total agreement, yeah, which I think they needed, right? I mean, you're going on to a new network. You don't really – there's always going to be some drop-off in numbers, you would think, when they switch over, although I think it's probably going to be more DVR numbers and live numbers. But still, I mean, you want to make a splash first night on a new network, if nothing else, just to show your network partners that, hey, you know, this isn't going to affect us, right? We're kind of bulletproof when it comes to this stuff. So, yeah, I hope that the show does good in the numbers. We'll find out, I guess, in the next day or so, but – for just from a show standpoint, I agree. One of the more entertaining shows I've seen from them in a while.
And you know, it's for me, it's not. I know for a lot of people, it's like I just want to be entertained. And from my seat, from my job, all these decades, it's not just is it entertaining, but is it effective? I mean, I always say this: you can always have a great entertaining show if you just put a bunch of big matches out there and have a bunch of people say crazy ass things that gets the internet buzzing. And have blood and beat people up. I mean, any week you can have a great show, your best ever, if you just are completely inefficient. And this sort of had all of that, but it also was efficient. It served a purpose. So it was sort of the best of both worlds. Like, it was really entertaining, but it was really smart. I mean, I think we'll talk about all this at length, but the MJF Punk segment I thought was stellar. I thought Serena Deeb established her personality more in a really good setting. They gave Ruby Soho something to do after coming up short. You know, one of the original acts in AEW, I mean, one of the very original signature acts, had their crowning moment and biggest moment yet, with Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus winning the tag team titles, you know, clean at the end. And it's an elevation for one of the pillars in Jungle Boy. And, oh, yeah, they started with a rematch that was, you know, every bit as good as a 60-minute draw, you know, different, but – I mean, right there, you know, as amazing. I actually ran a Twitter poll, and we'll get into that later in terms of which match people liked better. But yeah, this was entertaining, but it was just smart to finish, well-paced, well-produced, smartly booked. And I don't rave about Dynamite, like, by default, you know, even when other people think it's a really good show. Like, this really hit all those checkboxes. I think Tony Khan has grown a lot in the last couple of years. I know, Mike, you've, you know, talked about him on a PR standpoint sometimes and some of missteps on that front. And he had another one last weekend, I think. But he is he's really coming along, I think, just in terms of putting a team together and a roster together that can shine like this.
100%. Yeah, 100%. And I think that that's where there's really been no problems at all, right? I mean, like, the show has been booked really well most weeks. It's very rarely that I would sit here after a Dynamite, or that Andrew and I, when we record our show, would sit there after a show and be like, oh, you know what, it wasn't any good. You can pick apart certain things here and there, but I think for the most part, on a macro level, the show's pretty good week to week. It's the best show on television right now. There's not even really a close second, at least on American television. So I've really felt for a while that they've had the best book show. They're the show that I enjoy watching the most. Whereas sometimes, you know, sometimes you watch certain shows and it kind of feels like it's a job a little bit. And you're like, I mean, I'm not even entertained by this, but I'm watching it out of habit really more than anything else. That's not the case with AEW at all. Like, I want to sit down on Wednesday night and watch this show. And I think you're right. I think the key word I would use is smart. Everything they did tonight had a purpose behind it, had an explanation behind it. Like, one of the biggest things coming in tonight that I wasn't sure how they were going to really justify or get out of was you had a world title match that only a couple of weeks ago went 60 minutes. So how do you deliver something less than 60 minutes, knowing that it's probably not going to go to a draw again? How do you do something that's less than what you did before, but still have it mean something and kind of give the guys an explanation to why this match was less, you know, half the time of the other match. And that's where I thought they were really smart. I'm not always a big fan of, hey, let's just, like you said, throw blood on TV and get people entertained. But it served a purpose in that match. The announcers were talking about it. There's blood loss here. These guys are going to be fatigued. They didn't come right out and say they're going to be fatigued. They might not go an hour like last time. But right. They said it in a way where if you were paying attention, you knew what they were talking about. And it gave those guys an out for, we know we gave you a 60-minute classic last time out. This one's going to be half of that. But subliminally, there's a reason why.
Absolutely. All right, I want to get to our callers. They are lining up on the phone banks. An exciting show, a lot to talk about, a lot to get into. We've quickly talked about a lot of items. We want to expand on that. So let's introduce ourselves and the show. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Wednesday, January 5th, 2022. I'm so proud. I keep getting that right. Usually I get it wrong. I don't think I've screwed up yet, although maybe I have and don't remember. I'm Wade Keller, the host of the program, the editor, publisher, founder of the still ongoing Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter. Paper copies available at pwtorch.com/papercopy. PDF digital copies and all text copies available for our Patreon supporters and our VIP members. We'll talk about that later in the show. Also, the founder and editor of pwtorch.com, our website, and also host of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Shows and Podcasts. The other voice, and a lot of VIP shows too, but you know about that probably. The other voice you hear is Mike McMahon. This feels like two shows like coming together. What's a good analogy? It's like, you know, I don't know. I'll sound like we're.
It's
congratulating ourselves.
You know, my wife watches a lot of ABC shows, and when they combine two of them, they call it a crossover event. So that's what
there
we call this.
This is a crossover event, thanks to your wife. Mike, that's perfect. A crossover event. Mike McMahon of the Mike McMahon and Andrew Socek PW Torch Daily Cast that covers AEW every week on the PW Torch Daily Cast lineup. Normally, Mike, you're recording your own show. You had a shift in schedule sort of forced upon you by life, which actually worked out well because you're doing a show now that drops Tuesday nights usually. Last time was a big NXT show. We flipped them around. That's our story. We're sticking with it. And it actually worked out well. And so normally now you're doing a show that sort of gets everyone warmed up for Dynamite while covering Rampage and other news in AEW. So people can listen to that Wednesday afternoons to get all warmed up for Dynamite and then listen to this Wednesday night or Thursday. So it's working out well. Mike, I've talked a lot, but welcome back to the co-host chair after a long absence due to the logistics of you usually doing a show at the same time.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me back. We were just saying before we started this, I couldn't believe it. Like when I looked at the date on my Skype the last time we did one of these, I was like, that can't be right. It can't be that long.
I know. It's crazy. Yeah, well, welcome. I'm really looking forward to talking AEW with you instead of just listening to you and Andrew. I remember where I am when I listen to you and Andrew on my headphones. It's like walking my dog in the middle of the winter, going on bike rides. And so now it's like I'm, you know, talking to the guy that is usually in my ear with Andrew. So so sign up everybody to if you haven't yet, it's free. The PW Torch Daily Cast. Mike and Andrew do a great job. And just have fun banter. I mean, if you you know want to talk about shower habits and products, that's the show for you. Also, I'm a bar soap guy, by the way. I'm on Team Bar Soap.
That's good to hear.
yes. Although it's got to be Dove, otherwise my skin dries out.
That's okay. That's what I'm actually using now.
Yes, it is. Yes. So anyway, all right. We have a lot of serious stuff to talk about here, so let's do it. Our phone number, if you want to join the program, and you're all invited to do so, is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. And when you call, push 1 on your keypad. That flags you on our switchboard, and we'll know that you want to be on the show. You can also email us. The email address is wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. That's Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com. We have gotten a bunch of emails, but keep them coming, and we'll get to them as the show progresses. We do have our first call up is Hitton, and he is on a tight schedule, so we're going to go to him first. But everybody else, stand by, and we'll get to you too. So, Hinton, you are first up, Hinton from London, Ontario. Welcome to the show. Thanks for letting me know you needed to come on first. I encourage everybody to do that. Email me if you, because I know I don't want to discourage people from calling if they think they're going to have to wait on hold for an hour and they have to get to bed or have other things to do. So not that we'll let every, you know, someone go first every week because of that, but if it does come up that you want to go early, you can email me and let me know in the subject line. Hinton, welcome.
Hey, Wade. Hey, Mike. Good to talk to you. Second time ever that I'm talking to you, and really big fan of your show. And yeah, thanks for taking me first. I have a class to prepare for, so I just have a couple of quick points, and then I'm just going to hop right off. First is just a bit of a nitpick regarding the Jade Cargill, Ruby Soho, not the match itself, but more just the presentation of it. I think AEW could have done better in terms of the pizzazz of presenting their first TBS championship. The announcing, I thought, was pretty garbage in this match. You have supposedly two of the best announcers ever and one who won an Observer Award last year. And I thought they were really, like, from the beginning, when Justin Roberts announced that this was for the TBS championship, one of them just jokingly says, I bet he waited a long time to say that. And that was clearly some sort of inside gag they were referring to. And at the end, the announcers were very, very subdued and I feel like they should have said something like, oh, she just put the women's division on notice, or, you know, pull the wool over our eyes a little bit, mask Jade's in-ring weaknesses. I know the match wasn't good, and I'm not trying to sell that the match was great or anything, but you really need to accentuate the strengths of your first champion, right? And just something more than the casual laissez-faire tone in which they call this, and worse, like within 20, 30 seconds, yeah, they showed her daughter. I thought that was sweet, but it's like they skipped to the Serena Deeb interview a little too quickly. I thought they could linger more, show a bit of a celebration. I mean, when you had Britt Baker's title win, like she, you know, they showed a long celebration in the ring, and then she went up and she hugged freaking Shivani, right? And she's a heel. At the end of the show, you had like this lengthy celebration for Jungle Boy, who, you know, they won pre-existing tag titles, and then the Parade of Challengers came out. I liked that. I liked all that. But there wasn't even any, you know, maybe have Mark Sterling arrange some confetti or something. It just felt a little like, all right, we did this. We put the title on her. Now we just got to move along. This is not going to be the most talked about segment coming out of this show. Am I looking too deep into this? What do you guys think?
I might go ahead and answer some of that. I think there's some pertinent points, especially the initial point in about the announcing and the fanfare for the TBS match. What jumps out to you about what Hinton's brought up?
Yeah, no, I think he makes a good point. Yeah, I think part of it is, and they've done this a couple of times now, I think even on pay-per-view, sometimes just there's so much they've got going on. It's like we've got to get to the next segment really fast because we're jamming a lot into this two-hour block, and we don't have the time to let it linger. And maybe it was a product of that. I mean, obviously, none of us know what the timing issues were. Maybe they were running long, and they just needed to get to the next thing as quickly as possible to make sure that they had enough time, you know, remaining in the show. That's probably part of it. I also think part of it, too, was it's the second women's title. So we'll see how they portray it. But, you know, I don't know that they're going to portray it as a big, important title moving forward. I mean, the TNT title has been portrayed as a very significant, very important title. The TBS title might be the same, but that division just doesn't have the depth, obviously, that the men's division has. There's not as many women on the roster as men on the roster, so I don't know what the balance is going to be there and how they're going to play that out. Maybe this is just a signal that, yes, this was something we did, it's going to be part of the show, but maybe even in their eyes, it's not going to be a vitally important part of the show.
I would still argue that if you're going to have a big tournament and you're going to crown a winner, a little more gravitas, I think, was called for. I'll also say, and I thought this was where you're going to hit, and if Jade Cargill is the bad guy, like, don't show this adorable girl at ringside rooting her on before the match. You know, some people are like, oh, come on, everybody knows it's fake anyway, and people have daughters and blah, blah, blah. It's like, no, you're telling a story on television. You don't make the villain seems sympathetic, and because it's undercuts. I don't say it's impolite. It's undercuts Ruby Soho and her underdog story that this is a dream for her to win the tournament and become champion. And now you're sort of tugging at people's emotional heartstrings that there's this little girl. You room for her to be heartbroken when her mom loses. So I think it's fine. Her daughter's there. I don't know that her daughter needs on-air time at the beginning of the match. Maybe cut to the match, cut to her after the match, but at least then the emotions of rooting against Jade has already played out for the TV viewer. So small critique, but I mean, hey, it's worth, you know, cleaning up details and bringing stuff like that up. Anything else, Mike, that Hit brought up that you want to bring up?
Yeah, no, I think that that's probably part of it. I think it could have just been a timing issue, too, honestly. I agree with you, though, and I agree with him that having this sympathetic portrayal of having the family out there is not the best thing to do when she's supposed to be a heel. Because obviously, like you said, what your first reaction is you want to see the little girls, you know, see her mom lose, you know, while she's sitting in the front row. Of course you don't want to see that. So it does put you in a weird spot.
Yeah. Hitting back to you.
Yeah, I think that if you're actually serious about it, you'll find the time, just like they found the time for Cody's third title victory, to be celebrated in the way that it was on Rampage. But I don't want to dwell too much on it. It was just one sort of blip in the radar. My final topic before I go, I heard the MJF CM Punk promo. I don't have much to say about it other than the one thought that came to my mind was, what about Wardlow to WWE instead of MJF? I mean, he's probably going to lose to MJF when he turns on him, because I think they're going to build MJF up for the title scene. And the top title picture is a little too crowded for Wardlow, I think. And I think he'd benefit more from the split rosters that WWE currently has. And, I mean, size-wise, he's right up Vince McMahon's alley. So what do you guys think of that?
Mike, go ahead.
Yeah, I think that honestly, I think he'd have a better chance at succeeding there than MJF does. And that's not a knock on MJF. I think MJF is the better performer. But I don't know, despite reports that are put out there, I don't know that he's really what they're looking for, right? I mean, it's easy for WWE to look at MJF, know that he's gaining some steam, he's gaining some traction, people are talking about him, he can obviously cut a promo. And be interested in potentially signing him when he's, you know, available as a free agent. That being said, I mean, we've seen this before where they've signed big name guys and then they get him there and someone doesn't know how to use him, whoever it is, whether it's the system they have there or the person in charge or whomever, they don't get used correctly and they end up kind of being a middle of the card type guy. And then honestly, what could end up happening is 3 years later, he ends up exactly where a lot of guys ended up today, and that's getting cut. So I don't know. There's no guarantee that that's what would happen to MJF, of course. Guys have gone there and had success, whether it's AJ Styles or Kevin Steen or other kind of quote-unquote indie guys have gone there and had success. But he doesn't have a lot of size. The biggest thing he has going for him is definitely the microphone, and I don't know that they'd use him properly. I think they would look at him as the shiny new toy. He'd be used really, really strongly out of the gate. And then you'd be in the month six or the 1 year mark, and they're not going to know what to do with him. And he's just going to kind of float in the middle somewhere for a while. But Wardlow, like you said, he's got the size that they obviously want. I think he fits the mold, especially when you look at the direction that NXT is going in now. I mean, he clearly fits the mold of what they're looking for, I think.
I just replayed the table spot with Luchasaurus and Rey Fénix. I didn't catch it initially watching the match live. And Mike, your reaction indicates you did.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I feel like I buried the lead. Not buried the lead. There's a lot to talk about on the show. Injuries happen in wrestling. That was gruesome. So there was a table spot. Oh, Hint, I'm sorry. I know you got to run. Is there anything else you want to say before I detail that?
Oh, no, that's fine. I'll hang up now. Thanks, guys. Mike, great talking to you.
Thanks,
great,
you too.
Thanks. Yep. Thanks, Hinton. Sorry to kind of interrupt there, but I saw it. I'm like, okay, I missed that watching it live in the last few minutes. It explains, too, a little bit why it felt like the match, they had an extra minute and a half at the end for the celebration. And I assume they plan to have the tag team wrestlers come out, you know, on the stage and, stare down the new champions, which was a cool spot, but it went on for quite a while. And it might've been cause the match had to end a little sooner cause, Luchasaurus caught Rey Fénix diving out of midair and chokeslammed him through a table slammed him through a table in midair, but he landed on his, I think it was his right arm, if I have my memory right. And his arm just bent in the wrong direction and just, you know, landed in a way that isn't natural. He pointed frantically at his arm before the camera cut away. He knew something was really bad. I'm not a doctor, Mike. I don't know if it's better to have a dislocated elbow, which looked like it might have been, or a broken arm. Maybe it's both, but if it's a dislocation and they can pop it back in, then, you know, it's going to hurt like hell for a while, but, you know, it'll heal perhaps faster. I don't know. But your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it was pretty gruesome. His arm kind of got stuck behind him as he landed on the choke slam, and I didn't see it the first time. When we watched it live, I didn't see it. And then I noticed he was pointing at his arm, and he was calling a doctor over on the live shot. And I was like, ooh. In my head, I was actually about to tweet. I said, it looks like Phoenix might actually have hurt himself there.
Yeah.
And then they went to a pretty quick replay, and I was purposely watching his arm in the replay because I looked like he was pointing to his elbow, and you see it. It just gets trapped right behind his back as he landed. I think you're right. I'm not a doctor either, but just, you know, following sports over the years and things like that, I think a dislocation is probably better than a broken arm if that's what it is. But I know sometimes what they'll get concerned with, whether it's an ankle, ankles and elbows and shoulders seem to be the things that they're concerned with the most. When something like that dislocates, if you could very easily tear something that's in that vicinity, a tendon or something of that nature. So hopefully it's as minimal of an injury as possible because it looked pretty gruesome.
I assume they planned for Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus to win. But it just crossed my mind. If they knew Rey Fénix was badly hurt, you know, Tony sees a replay and goes, okay, he's going to be out for a while. I could actually have imagined them calling an audible in the ring. Is there anything that prevents that? I mean, I guess they had Jungle Boy's family at ringside and all the tag teams ready to come out. I'm just sort of not wildly speculating, but just throwing that possibility out there. Maybe this was a late audible because Tony's like, crap, Ray's going to be out for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. It looks like, I mean, again, who knows, right? But it looked like from the replay that he's going to be in tough shape for a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was watching the show and I was just like, how, like the Jade Cargill Ruby Soho finish. And I was like, okay, that could have gone bad. That could have gone wrong. Someone could have, you know, snapped an ankle or something like that, just landing awkwardly. And then Hangman Page with his moonsault power slam off the second rope, I think it was, of Daniel Bryan, maybe a third of the way into the match. I'm not sure exactly when it was. I was like, his head barely cleared. You know, like if his head landed and hit the mat, he'd, you know, break his neck. And I know I feel that way about every swanton Jeff Hardy's ever done. So as wrestlers have told me, and this is what I tell myself when I get a little like anxious watching them, like I just say, it echoes in my head. Wrestlers said, wait, relax. We know what we're doing. You know, we rarely get hurt. We know what we're doing. And I've had wrestlers tell me that when I'm like, that looked like he or she almost got hurt, but then this happens, you know, and it does make you pull back a little bit and just say, you know, how important are some of the spots that are by definition more dangerous because there's more room for error than other spots are much less dangerous, but still look great and are still part of telling a great story. And I think one of the criticisms of AEW for 2+ years has been, is enough enough sometimes? Like it's we're not holding up scorecards for daredevil risk taking. And I don't want to overreact to it, but, I thought about it a few times during the show, and then, you know, sure enough, it turns out in the end somebody, you know, ends up with that room for error costing them ring time and having a pretty gruesome injury.
Yeah, and it's happened a couple of times, too, and luckily they seem to have been able to avoid the major catastrophe. I mean, the ones that stick out are Matt Hardy. I forget, was it at, would have been Double or Nothing, maybe, a couple of years ago? When they did the stadium match with Sammy Guevara, he fell off the ladder and hit his head in the concrete. It was just woozy. You could tell something was wrong. That was one that sticks in my mind. There was one, too, I think it was a week or two ago, and I'm drawing a blank on who it was, but somebody, it may not even have been on Dynamite. It may have been on Dark or Rampage. Somebody kind of fell awkwardly on their neck, and I just remember thinking, like, oh, that didn't look good. And I'm drawing a blank. I wish I could remember who it was. Seem to have avoided the major catastrophe. They haven't had really this major, which is a good thing. I mean, that I can think of. I mean, guys get bumped up all the time, banged up. You're going to have guys that get hurt, but they have avoided kind of the major, this guy's going to be out a year type injury that happens sometimes. Hopefully this is not it with Rey Fénix too.
Yeah, I mean, we had the Ricky Starks injury, but that wasn't, you know, visibly gruesome.
Yeah, this was.
You know, this was kind of like Sid leg break level in a way. Yeah. So, all right. Well, let's move on. We got a lot of callers to get to, and you can join them 347-215-8558. Push 1 on your keypad when you call. If you are joining us live, the other voice you hear, well, I'm Wade Keller, and the other voice you hear is Mike McMahon. All right, let's go to Chris in Mount Pearl, Newfoundland. Up next, Chris, thanks for calling. What'd you think of Dynamite tonight?
Gentlemen, great to talk to you. Happy new calendar. Mike, great to hear from you. It's weird hearing you on the line and not hearing a ghost update, though. I'm not sure I'm going to be able to get away without that. So you'll have to make one up, I think.
I'll have to reach out to our emailer, Chad, who has a ghost in his house, who can let me know.
I'm looking at my notes here, and this is going to sound like I'm a negative Nelly, which is sad because I haven't called in for a bit. But I really enjoyed this show for the most part, the TBS title match aside. But I got some problems with these people. Since we were just talking about the Lucha Bros, and I hope Phoenix is all right, but I'm starting to think that they just shouldn't be a tag team. As singles wrestlers, they are both phenomenal and entertaining and great to watch. But as a tag team under North American rules, I just don't think they work. They don't – I can't call what they do tag team wrestling. It's spectacular spots with a lot of convoluted setup in between. And it just – every time I see them wrestle, unless it's against the Bucks, who can actually make it work somehow, it just feels like Jeff Goldblum wrestling, where it's like, yeah, yeah, you can, but actually should you? And it just does nothing for me. There were so many spots in this match where Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus are bad for it too. It just seemed like they were spending all their time setting up and getting into position, but there was no storytelling. There was nothing smooth about the match. It was special spot, walk around, special spot. And Phoenix especially is so good in singles, and when they have that singles match, they don't have that temptation to break all the rules and ignore 10 counts and do the tornado tag stuff. I don't know, am I alone on this, or do we think that maybe this isn't the place for the Lucha Brothers as a tag team?
Mike, what do you think of that?
I could go either way with them, honestly. I mean, Andrew and I covered them when they were both single stars in Impact, and they clearly could be singles guys in a heartbeat if you needed them to be. You know, hopefully Phoenix is okay, but if he's going to be out for a while, Pentagon could transition into a singles guy very, very smoothly. So I could go either way with it. I think part of it at the beginning when they were first forming the company, the tag team division really wasn't that deep, so they almost needed them there because you had the Bucks, and then it was like, well, who's going to work with the Bucks? I mean, a lot of the other tag teams were guys like Luchasaurus and Jungle Boy, guys who just were kind of new, and maybe they'd been together for a while, but not really on national television, so you had to kind of build them up on TV. Pentagon and Phoenix were a recognizable team they could have put them in there with right away. So I think that's probably why they were a team at the very beginning. They've kind of just kind of stuck that way. They separated a little bit, then came back together. But there's a lot more depth in that division now. So I don't know that they even necessarily need them as a tag team the way that they did probably 2 years ago because of the other tag teams that they've brought in, the tag teams that they've developed within their own roster themselves. So I could go either way with them. I think they're probably better off as singles guys right now, even though even that side of the card is starting to get a little full. But I almost prefer them as singles wrestlers, honestly.
I'm with you, Mike, in that I can go either way with it. I don't have a lot to add. I mean, you know, Phoenix is just spectacular. Penta with, you know, a lot of the body language and you know, it's like we talk about Kane being able to tell a story with just a little tilt of the head, little, you know, shoulder twitch, a little the timing of how he turns around and looks at someone. And Penta has a lot of those intangibles down. So in a way, they sort of complete each other. But in another way, yeah, there's a lot of money to be made with them as singles wrestlers, like in different ways. Because Phoenix could, you know, is just so spectacular. And Penta is so just great at telling a story in the ring. I'd like them. I think they, and it sort of ties into the last thing I said. I think they would benefit from not needing to show off everything that they can do as densely in each match as they do, and slow down and get into the art of storytelling and the less is more philosophy. I know it's real tempting with eager crowds who just eat up and chant, this is awesome, and pop and gasp at what you're doing. But sometimes you end up a little numb to it, or you forget, you know, after four straight spots, you forget what the first one was. It was so good. So my only, you know, critique, and it sounds counterintuitive and a lot of fans don't, you know, will disagree with me, but make their matches a little less exciting and tell a little bit more of a patient story. And I think then the signature big spots they do would mean more instead of seeming like they're just going for crowd pop. So I guess that's the only thing.
Yeah, I mean, I'd pay a lot of money to see Sammy Guevara and Rey Fénix in a feud. I'd love to see Penta do something with someone like Jericho even, but I would have no interest in seeing those two teams face, because I think it would be just an absolute car wreck. So just supporting the point, I guess. The Jade Ruby match, we know it was bad. Ruby is not Thunder Rosa. She can't carry someone. What shocked me when I looked it up is that Ruby is 30 and Jade Cargill is 29, and they're very young, so they've still got time to go. But I want to throw this out there, and as a man of color, I feel like I can. Do you think the plan changed this week? And do you think Jade was not supposed to win until all the backlash against Tony? And because that might explain some of what Hinton was talking about with the lack of the reaction and the commentators not really getting behind it. And I just feel like that's the sort of thing that maybe Tony would do. He has shown in the past that he listens to the criticism and makes changes to his booking. So what do you think on that?
I've been asked this a lot in the last few days from a lot of different ways from different people who I thought would win and if I thought plans would change. I was always leaning towards Jade. I shouldn't say always. I think I probably have gone back and forth because it is a close call. You know, they have a heel champ in Britt Baker. I think I came down on I wanted Ruby to win, but I didn't know how they could end Jade's winning streak without it seeming like a bad cop-out. So I then sort of talked myself into thinking, no, Jade will win, even though it has, you know, that is two heel women champions, because I just didn't know how they would do it. But I kind of ended on my VIP Focus on AEW show yesterday, just saying I'm really curious what Tony Khan does if Jade loses, how he tells that story. And if she wins, you know, that's a less difficult hill to climb because Ruby is, you know, the underdog who put up a good fight. So I guess he took the path of least resistance, and I'm not saying it's not the right path. I have no idea if that was planned all along or not. I have a feeling that unless somebody knows for sure, if Tony were asked that, he would say he did not change plans because he doesn't want to come across as someone who did under pressure, and that might take something away from the idea that this was a big endorsement for Jade. So, you know, that's my warning to say, even if he says it didn't change plans publicly, I'd just be a little skeptical of it because in a way I wouldn't blame him. I don't want him to take it away, that moment away from Jade by saying he only gave her a title because he hastily, clumsily responded to a headline, you know, in a way that didn't really fit the context of the criticism of his company. Mike, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I honestly believe that this was the original plan from the very beginning. Andrew and I talked about this when we recorded our show earlier in the week, and we kind of went back and forth on it, and I think we were both in the camp of this tournament was set up for Jade Cargill to win the title at the end of it, be the first TBS champion, and try to launch her the best way that they can. And she does need work. She is very green. She's very raw. She's relatively new to this. So I think they understand that. I think it's part of the reason why her matches have been booked the way that they've been booked to this point. This one went a little longer, and I think it exposed some things. So I wouldn't be surprised to see them go back to shorter matches for the first few title defenses. And at some point, you know, she's going to lose this title. She's going to lose her undefeated streak. But I think Andrew and I were both in agreement that this tournament was for her. At the end of the day, was to put a kind of cherry on top to her build in this long undefeated streak. And you also don't really need it. And we were talking about this too. You don't need every champion to be this fabulous wrestler. You know, you've got the world champion on the men's side. You've got the women's world champion. The tag team titles have been held traditionally by teams that have a very high work rate. The TNT championship has had some great matches contested for that belt. you know, you don't need, especially now with multiple championships in the company, I think you can get away with one of them, especially one that is going to be essentially your secondary women's title. It does not necessarily have to be the strongest working female on the roster has to hold this belt. You know, you can experiment with it a little bit, and if they want to do that right off the bat with Jade, I think that's probably where they were going with it from the very beginning.
All right, Chris, anything else you want to get to sort of quick, because we got a lot of people on hold?
Yeah, I'll just have a few quick hitters as I like to leave off with. MJF said
sure.
He's now focusing on the title. Isn't he supposed to be doing that all the time? Like, isn't that kind of your job as a wrestler? I feel like Cody either has to lose or cheat against Sammy to finish this trilogy off. I feel like this might be the trigger moment. Nyla Rose's Twitter is the best wrestling Twitter, bar none. She called Jade Bug tonight, and that's just some of the stuff she's been posting is gold. You need to follow her. And finally, I don't know if you noticed, he's been in the background of Sammy Guevara's vlogs for a while, but Kip Sabian was in the crowd tonight, and they showed him with his box on his head. So I have a feeling we might actually get to see him soon. I don't know if anyone else picked up on that. That's definitely a Javier thing. He's probably sitting there yelling at me right now. But, yeah,
hold.
I saw him, and he might be on his way back. So I'll leave you to pick the bones out of that, gentlemen. Lovely to talk to you, and hopefully I will be able to call again soon.
Excellent, Chris. Great hearing you again. So, Mike, grab any of that.
I did not notice Kip Sabian, but I was just thinking about him the other day. Again, Andrew and I were talking about kind of the depth on the roster and where some of these guys have gone. It's like, you know, the guys that they have signed way back in the beginning, some of them are still around, but there's others that had a prominent role and you kind of don't see anymore. And Kip Sabian was one of the ones that was right at the top of my list. So I'll have to go back and watch the show on DVR later and look for that because I completely missed it during the show.
How about MJF saying I'm focused on the title now? And Chris's point, hey, shouldn't everyone always be focused on the title? That hasn't really crossed my mind. I mean, I guess there's times when wrestlers are preoccupied with a personal grudge. They're trying to prove something against somebody who meant something to them at one point. They're immersed, like, in the Jericho storyline. I'm okay with sort of declaring, hey, 2022 – I'm always looking to win matches and move up in contention, but I think the idea with MJF is he's going to wrestle more often in order to earn a title shot, which was one of those three probably works, for wrestling tonight and Punk costing him the match by DQ and then gloating about it, going, how are you going to get a title shot if you keep having losses on your record? So how about that?
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's perfectly fine for wrestlers to sometimes admit that they're not necessarily chasing a title because of a personal grudge. I have this habit of remembering things 30 years ago, but not things that happened a year ago. Goldberg in WWE, somebody, you know, who was he feuding with when his son got pushed? Was it his son got hit at ringside or something like that? Two years ago?
Yeah, and then they paid it off in Saudi Arabia.
Which I think is a horrible example because I think that match was even for the title, if I remember correctly. But something like that can happen, and a wrestler can say, you know, hey, my son got hit at ringside. You know, I'm not worried about the title right now. This guy hit my kid. I'm going to go after him. I want revenge. I have to put this guy in his place. That's totally fine. These personal grudge storylines, I think, are a perfectly acceptable way to have a guy admit, I'm not focused on the title right now. I have to take care of this business first, and then I'm going to focus my efforts on the title after that, which, you know, MJF could certainly make the argument with during the Jericho feud. So I don't have a huge,
by the way.
That's who it was. That's right.
Yeah.
I don't have a huge issue with it, but, you know, ideally, yeah, you want your wrestling, you want them always focused on the world title all the time. That's supposed to be the end goal. But as long as they're focused on something else that's important, I don't think it's a huge deal.
All right, we'll keep rolling through calls here, and we'll go to Ryan in Cumberland, Maryland next. Ryan, thank you for calling. What stood out on Dynamite for you tonight?
I'm curious on who you think will beat Jade Cargill, since she has a pretty impressive winning streak. Anybody you have in mind?
Good question. Mike, the lay of the land for the AEW Women's Division just suddenly feels pretty deep. I mean, Britt Baker's got some competition now. It feels more of a stronger ensemble. Some of that is we're coming out of the pandemic, and there's Ruby Soho and Akira Shida. They've added Ruby Soho, Mercedes Martinez. Just your thoughts on the growth of the women's division, and then who jumps out as a possible next TBS champion to have what I think will be a significant and newsworthy victory over Jade.
Yeah, well, it's definitely been deeper for sure. I mean, for a while in the summer of 2019 and in early 2020, when they were just kind of forming the company, it felt like they had Britt Baker, Sheeta, Riho, and Nyla Rose, and that was it. You know, Brandy, I think every once in a while, like, there really wasn't a lot of women on the roster at all. It wasn't very deep. Now it definitely is. And I think that's why they can get away with the TBS title now, where they definitely couldn't have gotten away with it 2 years ago. There wasn't enough women on the roster to justify, you know, two women's championships. As for who beats her, that's a really good question. You know what? I'll be honest with you. I'm not even sure that Tony knows right now. You know, I think she's going to get a pretty long run with this for a while. And I think it's going to be a lot of what she was doing before. It's probably going to be a lot shorter matches to try to hide her weaknesses, accentuate the positives, hide the weaknesses. So I think they're going to go back to the formula that was kind of working throughout her run on Dark when she was building up a record, and even on the appearances that she had on Dynamite and Rampage. I couldn't even pinpoint it right now because I don't even think they know. I think this is going to go on for a little bit, and she may not lose this title for 6 to 8 months. I think she's going to have a run with it, and I think you're going to see her record. They made a very big point tonight that she's 23-0. I think JR said, or Tony Schiavone, one of them said, this is her 23rd win, and they'll never be able to take it away from her because it was for the TBS championship. They kept making a point, 23 wins. This is her 23rd win. I think they're going to go on a run here where they start counting, and she's going to get to 40. She's going to get to 50. It seemed like they were focused on that number tonight because they mentioned it a couple of times.
Yeah.
And I don't really remember. They'd always talked before how she was undefeated, but they weren't really mentioning the number before. They specifically mentioned the number tonight at least once or twice, and especially right after the match. So I wonder if they go on a run here where she's going to get to 50, 55. I mean, who knows, over the next 8 months.
Good point. Ryan, did you have anyone in mind? You asked the question.
Could be someone in WWE, that maybe like Tony Storm.
Tony Storm. That'd be a decent payoff, or maybe a great payoff, depending on, you know, obviously the story they told. But having, I don't know how the rest of the women's locker room would feel, but I think there's some respect for Tony Storm and having an ex-WWE wrestler who fans feel was not taken advantage of by, or appreciated is a better way to put it, by WWE management could be a good payoff for that. But yeah, I mean, fortunately, it's worthy of just kind of doing a lay of the land and looking at the lineup. You know, Hikaru Shida might be the one who can get a really good match. A better match out of Jade Cargill than most. And, you know, she's got a lot of credibility. I think there's a number of good contenders. And there might be somebody not even on our radar right now who rises up through the ranks, too, by the time, like you say, Mike, the winning streak gets built up.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing, too, is, like, you don't know. They've done a pretty good job with the TNT title, I think, of making sure that while, yes, it is below the world title, they're not just throwing anybody into that picture. It was Cody for a while when it first started. Well, it's a guy, you know, right at the top of the card. It's Cody again. They've used it at times to try to get guys towards the top of the card when Brody Lee had it, or when Sammy Guevara had it. I mean, so they've used it as a way to try to, stepping stone may be the wrong word, but as a way to elevate somebody, whether it was to really kind of try to elevate Brody Lee to that main event or elevate Sammy Guevara closer to that main event. So I think that's what they're probably going to do with this one as well. And I think it could start, like I said, with Jade going on a run here and maybe at some point challenging for the AEW Women's World title. Who knows? But yeah, I think whoever it is, it's going to be someone that's pretty close to that top of the card.
Ryan, anything else for us?
Final questions on the World Championship match. Has there been any match of judges where the participant was, like, trying to, like, really show off for the judges, like, stealing, like, their moves, like, Jerry Lynn's Tile Driver, like, bringing over, like, a bloody pendant over to the judges to look at?
I love that aspect of the match. You know, play to the judges. We were speculating, Mike, during the week about who the judges would be, and, you know, it came up like, well, you know, they've got Mark Henry, Paul White, and Jerry Lynn. I brought up Jerry Lynn, who would be, you know, a good name. He's so I don't know if underappreciated is the word, because I know everyone in the everybody I talk to in AEW says, and I hope I'm not getting him in trouble when I say this, that everyone says he's their favorite agent, or you know, he's their favorite agent to work with. There's just such respect for him, and people who know his body of work for 30 years. He had more best matches. He brought out the best matches and more wrestlers than probably anybody else with all the places he traveled and worked. And I don't think he likes hearing this, but he made less money in his career than the other 15 wrestlers in that 30-year period who were in his league work-wise, mm-hmm. Who had tenure. But now he's got, a job in AEW, and, I hear he's just so appreciated and happy. And so it was cool for him to get a little moment, get mentioned as a world champion next to two literally and figuratively bigger names in wrestling probably and Big Show. Paul White and Mark Henry. So I thought those were good judges, especially because they weren't going to incorporate them into the finish. It didn't make sense necessarily to fly somebody out, especially in, with COVID surging in so many places, including North Carolina, to take an unnecessary chance when you can just give TV time to three people like that. So I liked Bryan Danielson playing to them. I thought it was a smart strategy that somebody like Danielson with the role he's playing right now would do. Mike, any thoughts?
Yeah, I was actually surprised that they didn't utilize them in the finish somehow. And, obviously they weren't going to go to a decision. But I was kind of expecting maybe instead of 30 minutes, which is about what they did, maybe you go 45. And I was almost expecting at some point, if the goal here is to get a third match out of Danielson and Hangman, and I don't know if that's the goal, but I thought you could very easily get to that third match by kind of creating a controversial, UFC style finish where sometimes in UFC or MMA, you've got, the judges made the wrong call. You'll hear the judges' scorecard read and you're like, wow, that guy clearly won that fight and this guy won by split decision. They weren't going to go to a decision, but could you have done something where Hangman wins the match and one of the judges, whether it's Paul White or Jerry Lynn, gets heard on a microphone or gets interviewed backstage going, man, Hangman won the match, but I had Danielson winning the match, at that point. If I had to make a judgment there, I think Danielson would have won, or just to try to create some sort of controversy to get you to that third match if that was the idea. So I was actually surprised that they introduced the ones that they had. It was the perfect choice, like you said. It doesn't make sense to bring anybody in when they really weren't going to have anything of consequence to do at the end of that match anyway. But I was surprised, I guess, that the judges didn't have some sort of consequential thing to do there at the end of the match.
I don't know what the follow-up will be, and so much happened on that episode of Dynamite that we're talking about. I feel like we haven't given enough time to Hangman and Danielson and the outcome and the match quality other than talking about it at the beginning. But I wonder if there'll be something where – and I think they could move on and not bring it up again. I mean, it'd be fine. I'd be fine with it, but they do have that card to play where Danielson could end up obsessed with wanting to find out if he was ahead on their scorecards. And, they could film him, banging on someone's locker room door or going up to Jerry Lynn going, you had me ahead, right? You knew I was winning that match. But I don't really know that you want Danielson to make a good point that might take away from what I think is a pretty important moment in Hangman Page's career and title run. This was, and I mentioned this in my report at pwtorch.com, running down the show and analyzing it tonight. I was surprised that they didn't talk more about Hangman Page having yet to successfully defend the title with a victory. That made this match outcome more significant that he had that draw with Danielson. And I just think framing this as a match that made a big difference to getting his title reign off to a legit start in 2022 and really emphasizing there's no asterisks here. And maybe a post, unless I fast-forwarded past it and missed it, at a commercial break, there was no follow-up with Hangman, was there?
I don't think so, no.
Yeah, so, I love the bloody backstage, adrenaline-flowing victory promos, interviews, and I would have liked to have that. I mean, I'm not sure what I would have cut from this show in order to make room for anything, so I don't want to overcrowd it, but, Hangman had his this really big win, and Danielson had a significant loss. I would have liked to have heard from both of them in some form or fashion.
Yeah, and like I said, maybe it comes next week. I don't know, but yeah, I'm almost surprised that they didn't do anything after the match, especially with the blood involved. To have that visual of Hangman backstage, or it doesn't have to be in the ring, but backstage, cutting a promo, holding the belt, talking about how important the victory is to him with, you know, he's got the blonde hair, so his hair is red, his face is bloody. I mean, just that visual can be huge, as we've seen over the years.
Yep. All right, Ryan, anything else for us?
That's it. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure. Yep, you bet. All right, we're going to go to Nick next. If I remember right, Jay and Mike were both on hold. Both have dropped off. So if you guys do want to call back, you can be up next. It won't be a long, long wait. A couple other people dropped off, but I wasn't tracking it, and that sometimes happens when the show goes long. Let's go to Nick in Brattleboro. Nick, welcome.
Good evening. Happy New Year. I'm actually Team Aveeno Body Wash. Sorry about that, guys.
That's okay.
Just the last point you were making, that was going to be my leadoff point, is where was the old, you know, Gordon Solie, to go back to TBS, you know, post-match in front of the backdrop and the wrestlers, I beat him, sorry, I got blood on your jacket, you know, I mean, I was waiting for that, and I thought the fact that when Brian cut, I think part of the fact with the blood on him, it made him look more evil in a sense. There was a couple of shots where he's like got this real intense look in his face and the blood is all over him. And I thought they told a nice story in that in the match. But I agree. Maybe they do it on Rampage. Maybe they run it on Rampage or on Battle of the Belts. But I missed that. I wanted that.
Mike, your thoughts? The visuals in this match were amazing. I don't talk about this a lot. I used to shoot ringside photos a lot. I was the last photo that ever ran on the National Sports Daily in the 90s was a photo I took. Of Derek Dukes. It was a boxing story they were doing. And I used to shoot ringside photos for Pro Wrestling Illustrated, and I've had my ringside photography published in a bunch of magazines and newspapers and Pro Wrestling Torch, too, of course. And it's just, you know, great experiences being ringside. I've got on my wall a photo of Terry Funk cornering Tommy Young in the corner, one of my favorite photos I ever took. And Sean Waltman, this was actually mentioned on Twitter last week in a thread about Gabe Sapolsky mentioned he just watched the Lightning Kid Sean Waltman match against Sabu that was in Minneapolis at the American Indian Center, and how influential that was for him to see wrestling through a different lens and inspired the style that he promoted and booked. And I got a photo of Waltman leaping through the air with blood on his face into the awaiting arms of Sabu at ringside. I watched this match, and I haven't thought about this in a while, but I was like, I wish I was ringside for this match. Leaning on the ring apron like in the olden days with my 35-millimeter camera, looking for great photos. There were so many great shots, not just high spots flying through the ring, but the facial expressions, the emoting, and the submission holds, and it elevated the match. I mean, this is a match of the year contender early in 2022, Mike.
Yeah, I think he brings up a great point, too, about the visuals with Daniel Bryan. I am still making that mistake. The visuals of Bryan Danielson, of the blood in his face, but his eyes, like, it was a really cool visual, because so you had this just red face, just blood filled his whole face, and it almost kind of wrapped around his head because his hair is up and the hair short on the sides, so it almost looked like the blood was starting to run down the side of his head and almost around to the back of his head, but his eyes were clear, and there was a couple of times where he had that look in his face and his eyes would just kind of pierce through that red, and I had the same thought. I was like, wow, like, what? That's a powerful visual. It's a really, really powerful visual. They picked it up a couple of times, but I almost wanted them to zoom in on it even more. A couple of times where he had Hangman in trouble, and he was just staring at him, and he was giving him that glare.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't exactly like Austin in the sharpshooter with the blood coming down his face, but it reminded me a little bit of it, of just that look, that glare through the blood that I was like, wow, it was a powerful visual.
I would love to see, and I don't know that this is done very often, but I'd love to see a slideshow of photographs that chronicles a match rather than video clips. This is a match that warranted that. Like Hangman's reaction to Danielson doing the jumping jacks early and what that said about his just disdain for Danielson being so cocky and trying to get in his head. And Danielson just with glee, you know, reacting to messing with Hangman early. I mean, from the earliest stages, there was some good body language and facial expressions. And that's important. It's not just the moves. It's what you do in between the moves that counts. A highly respected wrestler like told me that once, and it really stuck with me. I'm not saying who it was because I can't remember if it was on the air or privately, but I did interview him once at least. So he said that, and I was like, yeah, you know, the between-the-moves stuff is when you really – you can tell somebody who gets the business, because the moves are important, but it's what you're doing in between that's as important, and so many people don't get that.
Yeah, one thing, in a sense, it's almost sad that we've lost the art of still photography.
Yeah.
You know, everything's become video, and, okay, you grab a clip, but – there's no way you get that iconic photo of Ali standing over Sonny Liston with his arm coming up like, come on, get up, I want to hit you again.
Yeah.
In video.
Yeah.
That's the, you know, and I grew up with Lookin' Life magazine, you know, back in the 60s, and my dad worked for Look, and he actually went to the South Pole with one of the great photographers, Johnny Vachon, and there are these great stills. He's talking to a penguin. There's a picture of him walking off into the white tundra with a shovel and a roll of toilet paper. I mean, just, I think today's kids, if you will, have lost that appreciation of the great photograph. And you're a photographer, so you understand what I'm saying is that you look for that, and then you can develop it, and you can shade it on, in the darkroom and stuff, and I miss that sometimes, is that I didn't buy a lot of them, but I remember the wrestling magazines at the newsstand, and you'd see there's, you know, Dusty Rhodes all bloody. I mean, they always had someone, you know, totally bloody on the cover, you know. But I wanted to pick a nit on it. There's no way they put the judges all next to each other. I'm sorry. You put them on either side of the ring so they get different perspective.
I don't think that's in UFC. I think they're all next week.
I don't know about UFC, but I know in boxing it was always, and the announcer would point to them, and it'd be on the three sides of the ring.
Interesting. Yeah.
I know. So I've covered UFC events in Massachusetts because I'm from Boston, and I know when they're here. This may be an athletic commission thing, but I know here they are on different sides of the cage.
Oh, okay.
Which I think is a commission rule, at least. I don't know if it's necessarily a UFC rule, but.
In Olympic boxing, if you watch, like, the ref, when he gives someone a penalty, he points to each side of the ring. It's because you can get different shots.
Yeah.
One guy might land a punch that from one side of the ring doesn't look like it landed at all, but from the other side of the ring, you see the guy's face explode, you know. And so, I mean, that's just a small net.
Well,
that's just a small net.
My small net along those lines, Nick, is I don't think they should be comparing notes. Like, it's like a jury, you know? You don't get – it's not a unanimous decision you need to deliberate together. This is – it's like you got to just independently decide who's going to win. I don't want – you know, Jerry Lynn's very persuasive. I don't want him talking big show into – or, you know, whatever, you know. Plus, Mark Henry's just going to make everybody laugh, and no one's going to be paying attention to the match with his dry –
either make
dry
everyone laugh or give
humor.
Everyone a bear hug, and then it's over, you know? quick on Phoenix. I hope he's okay. I skied a lot.
Not,
in my
but
youth.
He will be.
No, I know. Yeah. I mean, you know what I mean. I skied a lot when, and I dislocated shoulders and knees. As long as the ligaments don't tear, it's really painful. It hurts. But the recovery is not as bad as if you get ligament tears in addition to the dislocation. So I pray that he's going to be okay. I mean, you know, that it's a relatively quick recovery because they, you know, pop the puppy back in, and as long as nothing got chipped or you know. But, yeah, no, it didn't look good. I agree with you guys. It looked –
Well, Nick, I've been trying to talk myself into trying downhill skiing again for the first time in a long time.
Don't do it.
I know. I'm so worried about – I've looked it up online, you know, how dangerous it is. And then I read about this thing where if you ski in deep snow, there's these traps of snow near trees where the snow lands on a branch of a tree if the snow is deep enough, and then there's a hollow spot under the branch. And I read about how people tip upside down and then suffocate from the snow. And I'm like, oh, my God, I was just worried about, you know, being in a knee brace the rest of my life, screwing up my knee. And now I'm reading about this horrible way to die, and now you're telling me not to do it. And so
I went into an 8-foot snowdrift head first and couldn't get myself. I mean, and then, you know, a couple people came along and gave me their poles and pulled me out. I mean, it's – and that's why they say keep your tips up is, you know, especially in deep powder. Take up snowboarding. If you want to go downhill, do snowboarding. It's 10 times safer.
That's a good point. Yeah, because your leg,
it really
the
is.
Legs
it's
just,
totally so much
yeah,
safer.
Yeah, the legs won't twist. Yeah, they don't twist and cross.
Right.
Also, I dislocated my shoulder while practicing for my black belt test in karate when I was 16. And I dislocated my shoulder. It didn't pop back in for the whole trip to the hospital. Wait in the waiting room. It's aching. It's awful. Every little thing I did caused all this, you know, just radiation of vibrations of pain that I had never experienced before to that degree. And the ER doctor finally gets around to me, and it's been dislocated for over an hour at this point. He goes, okay, I'm going to try a few things for like 5 minutes. If it doesn't work, then, you know, we'll knock you out and do whatever we need to do. You know, whatever. We'll do other things. And he, like, with two fingers, his thumb and his forefinger, just grabs my wrist and just, like, pulls my arm down with just two fingers and just twist about a centimeter to the left, and it just popped in. And I was like, thank you so much, but where were you at the karate training center to do that for me? He knew exactly the little bit of torque in the position of the arm, so it would just pull down and let it pop back in. But I wore an immobilizer for the rest of my training for the test and took it off like a couple days before my test, and it was, it ached so much. And if that's what happened to Phoenix, I mean, an elbow is different than a shoulder, but I didn't land
your shoulders
from 10 feet
above. Your shoulders and hips are the ball and socket, so that's one thing. Elbows and knees it's bone on bone, and so if it goes sideways, as I said, that's where you can rip the tendons and ligaments, and that's when it can get really, really nasty.
Not to be too dark, but I wonder if Ray Phoenix is going to have this in his head, you know, forever. You know, if it changes his kind of daredevil style, or if that's not, or, you know, someone with his mindset who's as talented as he is just looks at that as, okay, I'm not doing a table spot again, flying over the ropes with Luchasaurus, but I'm fine with everything else that I've done my whole career. But it can get in your head. It's like, you know, how does Ricky Rubio feel the next time he drives to the basket, you know, once he comes back from this ACL tear?
The only thing I'll say is, do you remember the Y Rule of Sports and the guy who goes, you know, the agony of defeat guy?
Yeah.
He got up and did another jump.
Yeah, the thrill of victory, the agony of defeat. Look it up. If you're under, like, you know, 40 years old, go look that up online, because the music in that ABC Wide World of Sports and opening with the thrill of victory and agony of defeat is so iconic and classic, and it deserves to live on for generations.
And that guy that guy just got racked up.
Yes.
Quick on Jade, I'm wondering if she goes and gets 55, she gets 55 wins, and then she loses her 56th at the next Arthur Ashe show so that she doesn't beat Joe DiMaggio.
Mike, do you have anything to add any of what Nick and I have been talking about?
Does anybody remember what Goldberg's number was?
Like 185
or something? Football,
was it,
no.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it was.
Oh,
it was manufactured
like
a little bit there, too.
Was it 105 or something?
Was it that high? Was it over 100? Okay. I was going to say, did they do something really crazy and just like, you know what, we're just going to go to beat that number? But it's hard because they can't say.
I was close. I was close. I just looked it up. 173.
173, yeah.
There's
no
way.
And I guess 181 or something? Yeah. I guess 180-something.
Long. I was going to say that they haven't tried to get close to that. But with no house shows, you'd have to wrestle on every show for the next 3 years.
Oh, I know. I'm not even sure that number is legit. But, you know, Mike Tenay just, like, you know, said a different number each week. And I think they added.
Yeah, it felt like it was increasing by, like, 20 every week.
Yeah.
Well, they had 20 house shows. Come on, you know. I'll just say I thought it was a good show. Jade's really green, and I think they'll throw a lot of, you know, dead meat at her for the next couple months and then figure out, you know, where to go from there. But I really enjoyed the show. I thought the whole show was done well, and that's it.
Thanks, Nick. Great talking to you. And thanks
okay,
for talking
talk
me into
you
snowboarding. My niece, thank you. Mike, Jade Cargill, I feel like I'm more open to what AEW is doing with her than average, than the average person who I interact with about wrestling. I say, you know, wrestling is not all about assembling a roster that can just have one great match after another.
Yeah.
It's not all about good wrestling. And it feels like that's news to people. Like sometimes it's just like, I just want my 4.5 to 6-star ratings and then I'm happy. Like Tony Khan's in the business of selling personalities, and Jade Cargill really stands out. I mean, she's just different and she is really green, but she is so much better than she was 3 months ago. At least her matches are much more ambitious, especially these last two. And I mean, the setup to the finisher, I wouldn't have done that. I think it's irresponsible for the agent or producer to allow those women to like decide to do that spot. I don't think Jade's ready to do that yet. I think Jade's a good athlete and she's strong and there's something to be said for that. But I again, that just goes to the category of just, you know, do something else and don't risk breaking somebody literally. But she is, like, you can say it's, like, hard to watch her matches, and I'm not saying she's even close to an average worker. Like, she's very close, much closer to the most awful featured wrestler on TV than she is an average worker. But I get pushing her, and, you know, it's just you got to put her in the ring with the right people and tell a story in the match that makes sense, and you can get away with that. I mean, she's better than Omos right now. Like,
yeah. Oh,
she's
yeah.
doing
yeah.
more than him. So your thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, and I think this is where, you know, there's an element of not having house shows and only doing televised events that helps guys like Daniel Bryan, and it helps guys like CM Punk, and it attracts them. It attracts them to the company. It's one, not the only attractant to them, but it's certainly something that is attractive. It's a much shorter schedule. It's a reason why, you know, guys would jump to TNA 10 years ago, 15 years ago. But it does hurt someone in her position who doesn't have the ability to go out and work 4 or 5 matches a week with all these different women and learn from people, because there's a limited opportunity to get in the ring. You know, I do think there's an element of, well, not just her, there's other people on the roster too, where some of them just need reps, and it's hard to get reps when you've got Dynamite and you've got Rampage, and that's really it. I mean, yeah, they got Dark and Dark Elevation, but they're all television shows. You know, there's no, hey, we're going to put you on the road this weekend. You're going to work Serena Deeb 4 nights in a row, and you're going to learn a ton in the next 4 nights. She doesn't have that luxury. So it's going to be, I think, a little bit of a longer process with her. And then, like you said, not every match needs to be a 5-star match. I totally agree. And I'll preface this by saying, like I said earlier, I believe this was probably the plan from the beginning. But Tony, as a booker and as the owner of this company, also has to worry about trying to appeal to as many people as possible. And I think there's something to be said for what Big Swole talked about this past weekend, where she said someone like her daughter watches the show and says, you know, I don't see me on that program.
Yeah.
So there's something to be said, and I'm not saying that he made the decision because of that. Like I said, I think this was the plan all along. But I think there's something to be said from his perspective of trying to make his product as appealing to as broad of an audience as possible, that you do want to make sure that you appeal to everybody. And whether that means Jade Cargill, because maybe it gets a woman who's watching the show, or a little girl or a teenage girl who's watching the show who wouldn't have watched the show before, sees that and says, oh, maybe she's a YouTube clip tomorrow. And she goes, oh, that's kind of cool. I want to see what that's all about. If it grabs just a couple of people, you know, it's done its job. And you could say that about a lot of different things. But, yeah, I think there's an element to that, too, where you want to try to make yourself as appealing to as many people as possible.
And not having every match not look the same, with the same size of people against each other.
Sure.
I felt like NXT, you know, pre-2.0, got a little too similar in terms of the size and style of the wrestling. There were some notable differences, but most of what they were promoting, and I think it's part of what Vince McMahon, Kevin Dunn, and John Laurinaitis kind of rejected about it, it did feel like, I've been told by people who, well, frankly, don't like Triple H, but that you know, he really wasn't booking to his own proclivities. He was booking to become the internet darling, and he felt that would help give him an edge with, you know, moving up in Vince McMahon's eyes. And, you know, it all tumbled when AEW ended up winning the ratings battle. But, you know, there's a – not monotony. There's a good word for that it's escaping me, for everything kind of looking the same. And Jade breaks that. And I think that's good. You know, I mean, she's got to hit a certain threshold of improvement to be worth continuing to invest in. And you can say they're pushing her too early. But I think there's lots of – other reasons that pushing her is defensible, but I she's got to work hard to get better. Like, this is a big thing to get this push and to get a title and to have other women like Thunder Rosa and Ruby Soho, so many years of experience putting her over. And I haven't heard good or bad things about Jade behind the scenes. I haven't asked, I don't know, but you hope that she is expressing that level of gratitude towards the veterans who are helping make her look good. And I won't say passable in the ring, because some people say she doesn't look passable, but whatever they're doing to have matches on live TV without a net that they get start to finish on, you know, she's got to be, you know, it's like the quarterback who buys the offensive line dinner after a good game when he didn't get sacked. She's got to be doing that for them.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's an experiment. I mean, I think even Tony would admit this is an experiment. You know, he probably doesn't even know how this is going to turn out. Other than, I'm sure he has a plan. You know, is it going to work? Is it not going to work? You really don't know, especially when you're experimenting with a new talent like this, who's very, very new. But I think there's room to experiment with a title like this one, because it's not the women's world title. It's not the top title. You are allowed to experiment sometimes. And if you're going to do that, doing it with the second women's title as opposed to the women's world title is the one you would be able to experiment with. So I really don't think there's anything wrong with it.
All right, let's move on to Jay in Hartford. If you're joining us midstream here, thank you. And you can still call 347-215-8558. Push 1 on your keypad. I'm Wade Keller, and the other voice you hear is Mike McMahon from the PW Torch Daily Cast show that focuses on AEW with his co-host Andrew Socek every week. If you are enjoying Mike's analysis of AEW and you have not subscribed to the free podcast feed, the PW Torch Daily Cast, all you have to do right now while I'm talking is search PW Torch on your smartphone app and subscribe when the logo pops up. And we've got shows covering NXT, MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans, and Deep Dive with Rich Fan, Wrestling Night in America, covering wrestling's biggest stories. The show formerly focused on Ring of Honor that will now talk about Ring of Honor and other things. And so go check it out. It's free, and it is worth it. All right. How does that sound? It's Mike, your show is free, and it's worth it.
I like that.
I didn't mean for it to sound that way.
Oh, that's good. I like
yes. All right. Jay in Hartford is up next. Jay, welcome. Thanks for calling back. Good to hear from you. What do you think of Dynamite tonight? And Happy New Year.
Sure. Happy New Year, Wade and Mike. Thanks for taking my call. You can ignore my email since I called back in here now.
Oh, okay. Sure.
So I wanted
to
answer
completely.
That's mine, too. I wanted to touch on the Lucha Brothers. And I was very surprised to hear a caller earlier kind of express some of the same sentiments and thoughts that I had. I haven't followed them outside of their time in AEW. Like, I'm aware of the independents and who a lot of guys are, but I don't necessarily watch anything outside of WWE and now AEW, you know, a little Impact or something like that. So I'm not high on them. And I think throughout their entire time in AEW, I don't feel like they've been booked consistently as faces or heels. So I don't really know. I can't really get invested. I don't know how to take them. I thought they were faces at one point, but then their manager guy cut like a heel promo, and I was just confused. And you had the whole thing with Pac. They were heels. They were faces when they came back. So I think they've been faces for a while now, but that's part of why I can't get into their characters. As far as their in-ring work, I know they're talented, and I wouldn't take anything from them, but I did not like tonight's match. And never have I agreed with JR so much when he harps on the rules mm-hmm. and the ref and letting yeah. all four guys be in the ring. Like, I went back and I watched because I wanted to watch Brett Austin from Survivor Series 96, I guess, or 96. And there was a tag match on that show, and Jim Ross, you know, even back then, I didn't realize it at the time, but even back then he was talking about the ref and the rules, and I couldn't stop laughing knowing now in real life how mm-hmm. cranky he is and he really feels that way. So, but when he talked about it tonight, I'm like, yes, JR is right. I'm like, what is this ref doing? Like, the Lucha Bros are really all four guys, but especially the Lucha Brothers, they were constantly in the ring two at a time. And you guys hit on it earlier, like the match is really just mm-hmm. high spots. And it's also like double teamed, like high spots, like both guys have to be in the ring to make these things happen. And I'm like, what kind of match is this? And I'm thinking, like, are all of their matches like that? Because I don't know that I would be, I know they've had some classics. People rave about a lot of the matches they've had lately. I haven't really seen them. I think there's one a couple of months ago that people call probably the best ever. But if it was like anything I saw tonight, I'm like, eh, you know, give me a bit of a story and not just, and especially tonight, Wade, like the table spot, I wasn't a fan, yeah. you know, and I hope both guys, you know, get well soon. But it wasn't another qualification match. I'm like, how were we even allowed to have that spot? Like in WWE, I know that when it's like the ringside announce table, they let it go. But like, if you pull a table out and set it up, that's like a disqualification. Uh-huh. So I'm like, how did we pull out a table and we could use and end the match, keep going? I just wasn't a fan of the in-ring work as far as the main event's concerned. So if you feel like you talked about it enough, I'll move on. But that's kind of my take there.
I know when Tony was asked at one point about, you know, referees lax enforcement of rules and the taking five count, I thought his answer was a little kind of like a dismissive, I have more important things to worry about. But I also think he does think he has more important things to worry about. Like, I think that was an honest answer. He thinks that doesn't matter. It's his prerogative to think that. I'm with you, Jay. I'm more of a traditionalist, I guess, in that sense, although I don't think having a structure that's consistently followed should be seen as some outdated thing as much as something that should be brought back and be timeless. And so I would like wrestlers to work within the structure of the rules. I'd like the Bucks to do that more. I'd like the Lucha Brothers to do it more. It's one thing to, you know, work in any match that just is popping a crowd who are only going to see you in person maybe once or twice or three times every 2 years. And you just want to give those fans, those 200, 300, 400 fans or 1,000 or 1,500 fans, the best show you can in person, which is spot after spot, they're going nuts. But when you're a TV act and you're on TV a lot and you're building the pay-per-views, I just think that's time to kind of, like, I don't know. I want to say grow up a little bit, but, like, that sounds – I don't like that phrase even though I just said it. But, like, understand your context and your circumstances and change your style to something more efficient and, yes, logical. And don't make the referees look like buffoons. And don't make Jim Ross, you know, have this, you know, like, this – protest of the rings bell on air that he feels he has, and he obviously has the agency and equity to point out. Mike, your thoughts on that?
There needs to be rules for heels to break. And if
yeah,
you're not
going
to enforce
yeah.
them,
yeah.
if you're not going to enforce yeah. them, there's no rules, right?
Yeah.
I would equate it to, you know, you don't see the NBA deciding that, well, we're not going to call fouls when guys drive to the basket anymore, because when somebody gets, you know, whacked, or gets, you know, slammed to the floor, people ooh and ah, and it's exciting. Like, those fouls are exciting, so we're just not going to call them anymore. Like, no, there's rules for a reason. And even if you're not a sport, you're a simulated sport, so there needs to be rules, and yeah. For no other purpose, and they need to exist so that heels can break them, or else what makes a heel a heel?
Yeah, I mean, if you're doing a serious drama movie about a police force or the army or a courtroom or a newsroom, I mean, you don't want people who are in those realms professionally to be rolling their eyes at the ridiculousness of how you portray them, even if obviously shortcuts have to be made, you know, for, you know, the way objections are so much more dramatic on, you know, on movie courtrooms than they are in court, in actual courtrooms and stuff. You want to have some connection to reality. And so, yes, it's a simulated sport. It should resemble sports. You know, referees shouldn't be swallowing their whistle. One of my pet peeves in sports is when announcers go, come on, in the last, like, 2 minutes of a game. Let them play.
Exactly.
Meaning, swallow your whistle. Well, no, the rules are there so the best skilled athletes can actually, within the rules, win. If you swallow
right.
your whistle
right.
and you just go, it's a free-for-all, let everybody cheat, that's
yep.
not finding out who the best player is. So I've messaged people, like, telling them, like, commentators, like, stop saying that. Like, don't say let them play now. The rules should be equally enforced start to finish. So that is one of my sports pet peeves. And, yeah, I mean, I'm nodding along with Ross when he's like, oh, there's some extra latitude by the referee here letting the Lucha Brothers spend all this time in the ring. So, and you know what? I think they should take up the challenge enthusiastically. You know, let's see what we can do when we have a five-second count to do a double team or create a reasonable frequency of a referee being distracted or, you know, preoccupied with something where you can sneak in a little bit more. But it's more exciting when it seems like they're getting away with something or there's more outrage from the fans if they're cheating, if it seems like there's a rule that otherwise is typically enforced. Anyway, Jay, I don't want to belabor the point. Back to you.
No, that's, I appreciate your take on it. And so, like, one more point on the tag match is that I'm happy for Jurassic Express, right? I mean, they've you know, worked hard for a while. My son, although he doesn't really watch AEW, again, he's a Luchasaurus fan, right, because he's in the Dinosaurs. So I was excited to see them win. You know, and my only gripe was, you know, I'm still waiting for a Bryan Danielson, like a big Bryan Danielson match to like end the show for once and not start the show. But when I saw that the tag match was last, I'm thinking, okay, we're going to have a title change. And so I was glad they went with it. But I'll pivot now to Punk MJF and their promo battle, whatever you want to call it, right? And their the mention of WrestleMania. And their promos are great. I enjoy it. I pop. Well, maybe not. Maybe I don't pop, right? Like, I didn't care for the WrestleMania line because at what point do you just focus on your own product and not continue to draw attention to WWE? Like, you know, when MJF said, you weren't, at least Piper was good enough to main event Mania, to me he was, you know, granted, we all know WrestleMania is great. It is, you know, the grand spectacle, granddaddy of them all, what have you. And you'd be silly to try to convince anyone otherwise. But I don't think AEW needs to say it. Oh, WrestleMania is the greatest show ever, which is kind of what I took from MJF saying, hey, but you weren't good enough to be on WrestleMania. Well, Punk's in AEW. Who cares? Like, now he should just want to be good enough to be on, I don't know, All Out. You know what I mean? Like, if that makes sense. So, like, stop making references to WWE. And I could have dealt with that and said, okay, they did it again. But then later on in the night, Adam Cole says about Jake Atlas, I'm going to send you back to Orlando. And I'm like, okay, enough already. Like, you guys are doing really well. You created this product. People are watching, and you're growing, or I guess, you know, what have you. Like, you don't need to constantly reference WWE. And I feel like sometimes maybe Tony Khan's like, oh, look, they would never mention AEW, but I can mention their show and not lose viewers. Like, I don't know. Sometimes I think he just does things to say, oh, look, I can do what they won't do and still be successful, if that makes sense. But I think it's just becoming – we didn't need, like, three or four different WWE references in one show.
Mike, how do you feel about that, especially MJF in the storyline, that he's just waiting for a bidding war, and whoever pays him more, he's going to go there, and that outrages AEW fans who see him as not loyal to the brand, but just waiting for a bidding war for his services, and, you know, playing that up, but also – trying to pull at some sore spots, weak spots in CM Punk and his history in WWE, being that WWE champion who only main evented pay-per-views when he was against John Cena or The Rock, but otherwise was on the undercard and had made vocalized that he wanted to be in the main event of WrestleMania, and MJF picking at that scab.
I think there's two different – they're very distinct lines. Like, I think there's a clear difference between what MJF was doing and what Adam Cole was doing. I don't have any problem with the MJF version of this, or what MJF said, because everybody knows Punk's story. He told the story. He told the story on Cabana's podcast. I mean, we all knew that story of CM Punk. The Adam Cole line, I think, was a little different. I don't think you needed it there, per se. Like, you didn't need to tell Jake Atlas, hey, I'm going to send you back to Orlando. That's just, okay. Yeah, that almost felt a little too inside baseball, where at least with the MJF line, this has been a well-publicized story. Like, everybody knew what Punk was upset about. Everybody knew what Punk ultimately wanted, what he was kind of aiming for at the end. And I think MJF using the potential bidding war, playing this up, is a good heel tactic in this company, because a lot of these fans, especially the diehard AEW fans, the real hardcore fans, absolutely hate WWE. It's they're revolting against it. So I think it's something that he can use to generate heat in a way that it's hard for heels to generate heat in today's age, because ultimately the heels end up just trying to be, or the heels end up being the cool ones a lot of times, right?
Right.
Especially to this audience, which trends a little younger. And I think it's a interesting tactic to play up the fact that he's going to try to go to WWE or go to whoever's going to pay him the most money in a couple of years, and keeps mentioning WWE over and over again, because a lot of their hardcore AEW fans look at WWE as the heel. I mean, WWE portrayed themselves as the heel for a very long time.
It's
part of the reason why I think maybe people were revolting against Roman Reigns. Like, they spent 20 years telling us that the company's the bad guy, and wondering why, and then all of a sudden we're wondering why people are going against what the company says. But there's an element of that. So MJF using it against Punk, knowing Punk's story, and knowing how I think the audience perceives the other company, I think it's smart on MJF, from an MJF perspective, to use that to generate heat. From the Adam Cole line later in the show, I would agree there. I think that's just looking for a spot to include it where you didn't really need to bring up WWE. You were almost kind of fishing for a way to work that in, where with MJF and Punk, it felt a lot more natural.
I will say, in defense of Adam Cole, he's standing there with Kyle O'Reilly, who's fresh off of NXT, Bobby Fish, who was there not that long ago. They were three of the core members of the number one faction in NXT for a very long time. And now another guy from NXT just showed up. I didn't feel like it was wedging it in. It was, in a way, it sort of came across as Cole saying, you followed us here, but you're not going to last long here. And I mean, Jay, I get in general principle what you're saying. In this case, I wasn't bothered by it, but I would absolutely be on your side if next week and the week after they come in here, we're close to matching as many WWE references.
Yeah, and I appreciate both of your points. And it's funny, right? I ran about, oh, they do it too much. But I'm actually a fan of MJF, kind of like bidding war things. I do like that aspect of it. It's
kind of Brian Pillman-esque.
Like WWE. Yeah, exactly.
Brian Pillman-esque, where it's like, is Tony Khan going to get played like Bischoff? he ends up. Yeah, so anyway.
Good point. No, the two points I wanted to get into tonight was the tag match and the WWE references. I think that's all I got. So happy new year. I'll leave it at that.
Thanks. Appreciate it, Jay. It was good hearing from you.
Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
Happy new year. All right. We'll take one more call before we get to Javier. Javier, thanks for holding all this time. And we have a gigantic stack of emails, which we may or may not get to here on the show. Given how long we're running here, we'll see. 973, you are up.
Hi, can you guys hear me?
If you're on Bluetooth, if you can go on a regular phone, that'd be better. We're hearing a lot of car noise.
Oh, sure. Yeah, sure. How about now?
Yeah, that's better. Go ahead. State your name and where you're calling from.
My name is Matt. I'm calling from New Jersey. I'm literally just
got
out of the show tonight.
Excellent. Yeah, I was thinking with Erico that might be the case. Cool. Thanks for calling. What did you think of the show?
This is my first AEW show, and we were really excited to see it. I took my daughter to go see it, and I think we had a really great time. I mean, she had a fantastic time.
Yes, I did!
it was one of those things that I was really interested to see how different it would be from the television broadcast to seeing it all, in person. And I think they put on a really good show. We had a really good time. One of the things I wanted to point on, I don't know if you guys, I'm guessing you guys aren't talking any Rampage tonight.
With with spoiler warnings, Matt, if as long as we save it to the end and give a spoiler warning, then people can hit fast forward for, you know, 30 seconds or a minute, and then I'm fine with that. But, yeah, otherwise, please go.
Well, I don't have a spoiler. I just really wanted to point out how over Hook is. Like,
oh, wow, yeah.
I mean, I want to say from the entire night, has to have been top two pop of the night.
Wow.
Pop of the night. As his match is going on, everybody's on their feet. Everybody's yelling for Hook. At one point, everybody started screaming, "We are Hookers." Like, it was one of those things that, like, on on television, I didn't realize how over he was. But in person, like, people were chanting his name from the moment they started setting up for Rampage. Like, we knew exactly what, you know, they knew exactly what they wanted. And just to back that all up, like, seeing him in person, the look, the swag, the music, all of that just was, you know, he is a complete package. I'm really excited to see what they have going for him in the future.
Matt, I have to break in and ask, what does your daughter think of Hook?
What did you think of Hook? She really just wanted to see Adam Cole. That's the only person she wanted to see.
Oh, cool. That's awesome. Baby.
She's
how old is your daughter?
She's 7.
Yeah, that's great.
And honestly, it all started because I was watching All Out, and when he made his intro, that theme song just really captivated her. So, like, her number one moment was when that song blared in the speakers, and it was great. But in regard to Dynamite itself, you know, I thought it was a really great show. You know, the MJF and CM Punk segment was something that I enjoyed. But that the main event was absolutely fantastic. Like, I think that was a part of the show where things started to die down a little bit. But once that match kind of got going and they started ramping things up, man, the crowd just really got behind everybody. And it's unfortunate what happened with the table spot, but still, they put on a heck of a show. And it was a really nice feeling to see, you know, Jungle Express finally get those titles. And everybody stood on their feet and just gave them appreciation for it. It was a really cool moment.
Yes. I hope the Rey Fénix thing isn't, you know, doesn't overshadow. Two things can exist. And separately, and Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus winning the belts, and all the tag teams coming out on the stage, and cutting to Jericho, and was it Aleister Black? Was there someone else they cut to for reaction shots? Again, I don't know how much of that was planned and how much was what had to be planned. I mean, they had to have cameras ready to be on them, and it felt like a big deal.
So,
you know?
That was also on television, I'm assuming.
It went on for quite a while. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say on the big screen, they cut to Jericho, they cut to Malakai, and then they had all the tag teams come out on the stage. But it wasn't like a congratulatory, like, we're so happy for you. It was more like, we're lining up challengers for you guys right away.
Yeah, I thought it was cool. What happened with Rey Fénix after the match, after the show went off the air?
We barely even saw him. I think from where I was sitting, I think they just kind of took him off to the side, you know, the sneak exit. You didn't really see the Lucha Brothers after the match ended. They kind of just disappeared. So they probably went to get help right away.
Yeah, he got badly hurt on that spot. Anything else you want to bring up before Mike and I quiz you a little bit on a couple other things?
No, that was everything. I kind of just wanted to I was so excited I'm buzzing about the show. This is the first time I've ever called in. I was just like, man, I got to call in this time.
I hope you call in more. I say that to all the wallflowers who listen live, especially, but don't join us, or who listen on delay and don't listen live. Tell me a little bit, if you don't mind, if you can safely, about Danielson and Hangman and the crowd, the ebb and flow of how they reacted to Hangman as babyface and Danielson as heel.
You know, for one, I think we were all pretty surprised that it was the first match. From that moment on, we knew, like, oh, okay, the tag match is going on last. But we were really excited for it. You know, there wasn't really a vibe of, like, who's face, who's heel. I think people just, like, picked their sides and they rooted for their guy. The crowd seemed pretty even. You know, yes, Chance were going. I mean, I don't, pardon my French, but, like, Ish was, like, comes up every now and then, and, like, people get really loud for their people. And, you know, it felt pretty even. I kind of knew that it wasn't going to go the distance. I didn't think the judges were going to play a part in it. I didn't think they were going to do that twice, and that's exactly what they did. But nobody around me were thinking, you know, oh, what was the point of the judges or anything like that. I think we just wanted to see another Bryan-Adam Page match, and it felt really declarative at the end. And when Adam Page was walking off, it felt like a champion was walking away from a really hard contested fight. So that was really cool.
How do you rank the most popular wrestlers on the show? Do you have a top tier group off the top of your head?
Off the top of my head, I would probably say number one, CM Punk. Yeah. There were just CM Punk shirts everywhere. I think literally 100 people had my shirt on. I also have a CM Punk shirt on. You know, Jericho gets a huge pop because everybody sings his song. MJF got a huge pop. There was a good reaction for when he came out, a good heel reaction, so that was cool to see. And then the tag team guys, I think just people are just in love with Jungle Boy. Like, they yeah. love Jurassic Express, but they really like Jungle Boy. And I think a lot of that love came through when they won that championship. And you can observe it, and, you know, at the end of it, he's giving people hugs by the crowds, and it just kind of felt like a crowning moment. And definitely Jungle Boy is a top tier.
Was there anything about the experience, and then Mike, I'm going to throw to you for a question. Was there anything about the experience that surprised you, good, bad, or otherwise, about your first AEW Live experience?
Surprise? I don't necessarily feel like I was surprised, only because, you know, watching it on TV, you can kind of see the crowd's pretty rabid. And that kind of came through tonight as well. You know, when we got there early for the pre-tapings, you know, the arena looked pretty empty. But, like, as soon as 8 o'clock hit, you know, it looked like most of the seats were completely filled. The energy was there. There is one thing, and, you know, it doesn't really have anything to do with this show, but, like, I feel like it goes back to some of the Twitter drama that Tony Khan got into this week.
Yeah.
And it's like, there were a few times in the like in the beginning of the show, he would like introduce and like do a quick introduction and like say hi to everybody. Yo, this guy
yeah.
is like a nerd. Like, he is like a true wrestling nerd, and he kind of comes yeah. off a little like awkward when he talks. And like when you hear him like describe certain things, you think back to the tweet and go like, of course he made that tweet because he's kind of a mark. Like, you know what I mean? Like, he kind of defends
yep.
his stuff the way, like, you know, like a mark would defend it. And not excusing it in any way. I have my own opinions about it. But when you see him in person, it's just like, it's kind of cringy when he talks. But, like, you know, thankfully it's not on a live show. He kind of does it to just hype the crowd up. I just thought that was really interesting and surprising to see, like, how he carries himself. And how much of, like, a wrestling geek he is, and you kind of
yeah.
appreciate it in a way.
I mentioned that with Jason Powell yesterday on the Blue Logo Show, the Wake Up Wrestling Podcast flagship. I was like, Tony is so enthusiastic about his product and is such a big wrestling fan that wrestling fans give him more latitude, I think, ultimately, even if they get upset with him or roll their eyes or think, oh, God, that wasn't the right thing to do. I think you get goodwill points, you score points with fans if they think the promoter doesn't look at them as marks or a customer to a product, but they're as into what they're doing as the fans are. And I promise
right.
you, Tony is. Like, that's – he has that going for him. And, yes, he's socially awkward. And, I mean, no people who haven't seen him at an arena, you know, haven't noticed how just uninhibited he is about how excited he is to be at his own shows and wave to the fans. At Full Gear, he just kept waving to the fans, like, in the ring, at ringside. He stopped halfway up the aisle and waved at fans more, got on the stage, kept waving, and I think two people came out with a hook. He's just totally wrapped up in the moment, and it is different. But he carries himself, like, super professionally, like in the Q&A for the media, and on radio interviews and such, you know, sit down interviews on camera for podcasts. But when he's in the element, yeah, he's just a big kid.
Yeah, that's
Mike,
a really
before,
good.
Go ahead, Matt.
I was just going to say that was a really good distinction because watching him on press calls, it's completely different than when he grabbed that mic and he's on top of the ramp and he's just fanboying. And
yes.
coming out and hugging
he is
the
a
wrestlers serious. After matches and, like,
yes.
He's a serious person.
Yeah, he's a serious person and a serious businessman in so many ways, but he has no either self-awareness or problem. It's letting his guard down. And I think it's endearing. You know, it's very different than I think what fans have seen, you know, with Vince McMahon over the years and his quirky kids. Mike, before we run out of time with Matt, is there anything you want to jump in with to ask him about?
I actually wanted to get you two quick things. What was the crowd reaction to Jade Cargill winning the TBS championship, number one? And then also, this has nothing to do with the show itself, but what were the merchandise lines like? Because I know some people that have gone to some shows recently within the last couple of months, and it seems like that has been something that's been an issue per se, probably not an issue for AEW because they're selling a lot of merch, but there's been long lines at a lot of the merchandise stands. So how have they kind of handled that crowd flow? Is it any better? And what was the reaction to Jade winning that match?
Jade got a huge pop when she won that match. I think in the beginning it was a little lukewarm when the match started. It took a little bit for it to pick up, but then, like, people started choosing sides. I think it was another situation where it wasn't, like, a clear, we're cheering the baby face and we're booing the heel. I kind of think people just had to first get into the match, and then I think at some point, like, Jade is kind of undeniable, where, like, before you knew it, like, there were Let's Go Jade chants, like, echoing throughout the place. And I don't think people would have been upset that Ruby won, but I do feel like people were more excited that Jade won. And then, on, you know, the cherry on top when she, you know, she grabs her daughter and they do the whole moment with her daughter and she's walking up the stage, I felt like that was really important because, you know, they book her like a monster, but it was nice to, like, humanize her a bit. And then just kind of, like, give us the opportunity to, like, also feel good for this. Like, it's not just a situation where, like, the bad guy won and, like, we're all, like, kissing our teeth. It was kind of like, you know what? You know, she worked really hard for this. You know, she deserves it. And we're happy to see it. And we're happy to see how this will move forward. I also couldn't help but think in the back of my mind, I think this Jade thing was going to happen regardless. But after all the swole stuff, you also couldn't help but think that, like, you know, maybe this was also just another example of, like, look, you know, like, what do you mean we don't have diversity? You know, we have, like, the first, you know, black female champion. Like, this is a big deal, and it is. And I think it was going to happen regardless, so I don't put a lot of stock into it. But when it comes to the merchandise lines, honestly, I didn't, you know, from where we came in, we just kind of came in, got some food, and went to our seats. We didn't really see merchandise in our section. I will say, though, like, there were, like, very little lines at concessions, and something tells me that there wasn't really long lines at the merchandise line either, because someone in my row went to go get a shirt, and they were back, like, within 20 minutes. So that kind of tells me that the line must have not been that long.
Yeah.
I think people were just kind of going throughout the show.
Good.
Before I let you go, Matt, and I want to give our listeners a chance to fast forward a minute or so, but anything you want to share about what happened on Rampage that was, don't just give away results for no reason, but was there anything kind of that jumped out to you that is spectacular or worth watching or don't lose?
Honestly, I think nothing really, like, spoiler-worthy really happened. I'm sure you know the matches that occurred because I think they announced them at the end of the show. There was Adam Cole, Jake Atlas. I'm not really sure what occurred there, but I think an injury might have occurred with Jake Atlas, and they had to cut the match short towards the end. I'm not sure if it was a work, but they were helping Jake up the ramp. Some security guys were helping him up the ramp. I think he might have a knee injury. The hook match was pretty good, just showcasing what was into it. The tag match with Britt was a pretty good tag match. I mean, nothing really special happened there. So, you know, one was the trios match with Eddie Kingston and the boys versus 2.0. And I think that was really just a big
kind of like a homecoming match for the home team, give them a big win, and then at the end of the show, they kind of had like a little speech and like riled us up, and so nothing really too noteworthy.
Yeah, yep, fair enough. We'll check on that Jake Atlas situation. Hope that'd be a bummer for him to get a knee injury in what I think is the second AEW match.
Yeah.
Cool.
It felt like it was swelling up to be a pretty decent match, too.
Yeah, yeah. Anything else, Mike, you want to ask Matt?
No. I think that's cool. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, Matt,
thanks
so much. Call again.
My call.
And Matt, if you do have time today or tomorrow to just send in quick results to our email of what happened, we can kind of run it with a spoiler warning on the site.
Oh, for Rampage?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it doesn't have to be real long. You can, you know, however long you want to go with it. But we like to put that up
absolutely.
If we can.
Yeah, no problem.
Great.
All right, thanks, guys. Have a great night.
Thanks to your daughter. Do you want to say her name on the air?
Her name is Harper.
It doesn't matter.
No, it's fine.
Harper, thanks for your contributions, Harper.
They just wanted to say thank you. Relax.
Adam,
all right, guys. Happy New Year. Enjoy your night.
Happy New Year to you. Thanks, Matt.
Good night.
Good night. On the post day one pay-per-view roundtable for VIP members, Todd Martin and Rich Van joined me, and Rich spent like half his analysis talking about what his 9-year-old son thought of everything that was going on the show, and people were like, "Yeah, we need more of that, more kids' perspectives on things." It kind of.
I'll tell you what I kind of judged that off of like what my kids are saying. What are they into? I have a 12-year-old and a 9-year-old, and it's like, what are they like? Especially with WWE, like they're not really writing the show for me anymore. Like they're trying to get my kids. Like that's what they're really trying to get.
But they're
and,
only getting 6-year-olds. I mean,
that's
NXT
the thing.
Is such an old audience. Yeah.
I know, it's weird. But no, I judge a lot of what they're doing based upon what resonates with them and what doesn't. And there's some things that resonate very well with them, and there's some things that resonate not very well with them at all. So.
Yeah. All right. Well, Javier, patiently, hopefully entertained for the last couple hours here, waiting in line. Javier, welcome. We got to play music. It feels like it's been forever. Let's see what we can do here. There we go. Javier. PW Torch contributor, sometimes a co-host, host of the New Japan Pride podcast. It's been a busy week for you, and I'm glad you called in. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Mike. Happy New Year, Wade. I was actually not really planning on calling because I still have to catch up on day two, but I saw Mike was on, and I'm like, I've got to call in and talk to Mike.
I was going to say, if you've been doing New Japan all week, have you slept yet?
It's more like, have I gone to work?
Okay, fair enough.
I want to talk to you about, because I've had a question I wanted to ask you for a while. I joined you and Andrew for the Bound for Glory 22 pay-per-view for Impact.
Yeah.
And that was around like the last time you guys talked about Impact. Was it something I said?
No, I'll be honest with you. I haven't watched much of the show. Every once in a while I will, and I'll get caught up here and there. But I'll be honest with you, there was some news today that may help me tune back in again. But I got tired of it. I kind of tuned out around Wrestle House last year. That was kind of the last straw for me. I'll check it every once in a while, see what's going on, but I've definitely been out of the loop over the last 12 months.
WrestleHouse was a guilty pleasure. Javier, you did not have to wait almost 2 hours to ask Mike that. Like, you could DM him. I mean, it's more fun this way, but I mean, I'm just saying.
Mike for something. I did DM him for something that you had mentioned on one of the shows. I DM'd you for something. You never got back to me. So.
Oh, really? I'm usually pretty good about that.
Yeah.
That's my bad. I'm sorry.
Yeah, because you were talking about, like, I think you were talking about the over, like, booked commentary team or something about that, and that you should get a third person. And I DM'd you, hey, you know, if you want to screw with your fans, just, you know, call me in for a day. So I said, hey, yeah, we brought him in.
I was talking about how I don't like, that's my bad. I'm always pretty good about whether it's a DM or if someone, you know, just mentions me. I'm always anxious. I feel like I need to get back to people. If I don't, I feel, you know, I get anxiety about it. So
I live with anxiety over that. Constant feeling guilty. Yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, I don't really have much. Yeah. I didn't have too much on AEW because it was a good show overall. The one thing that did catch my eye and feel like it kind of felt like the crowd was a little bit confused was I understand what they were going with the whole CM Punk thing, but did he have to murder the captain? Because I mean, that was like a lot for that.
I thought I might be wrong here, but I thought the captain, Sean Dean, right? Is that his name?
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought he kind of mouthed off to Punk, like, what are you doing in my ring? Like, I thought there was a little attitude and body language before he kind of turned to MJF and said, get back in the ring. And I thought it was just enough kind of an antagonistic demeanor to Punk to kind of trigger him to maybe, you know, add a little extra to it. That was even before he did what he did to him, I thought, is Dean kind of getting some attitude with Punk? So if that was intended, maybe it needed to be done more clearly.
Yeah, because it kind of felt like there was a reaction from the crowd of, like, what's going on?
Yeah. I mean, if Sean Dean has to be sacrificed to cost MJF his pristine record, in singles matches, I think fans will forgive him.
Yeah, but it was weird because, like after that, I could have heard people chanting BS, maybe. I don't know. It sounded like the there was competing pro MJF and pro CM Punk. I don't know if you guys caught that, but that's kind of what I heard.
Gotcha. Javier, which match did you like better? Because I mentioned this earlier. I don't want to forget to do it. I ran a Twitter poll and asked which match between Hangman Page and Bryan Danielson was better, the 60-minute draw or the rematch, or too close to call. So, Javier, which one did you like better? And then, Mike, I'll ask you. And then I also want you guys to predict, if you haven't seen, which match you think came out ahead.
I liked this one better, but a lot of it's because of the work they did in the previous match. You know, because they went back to some previous spots, and the story that they told in this match was enhanced by the story they told in the first match. So I actually like this one better, but... you know, it can't exist in the vacuum without the first one.
Yeah. How about you, Mike?
I like this match better. I think the poll will say this match too, just because this is the fresher one.
Yeah. I rated the 60 minutes raw higher, but I think they're really close to each other and they're very different matches. You know, for some of the reasons you said, Javier, paced differently. This had a greater sense of urgency and blood and violence and intensity. The 60-minute draw, it felt like it was the appropriate first match to have. So anyway, yeah, the poll results are 52% like the rematch tonight, 21% like the 60-minute draw better, 27% said too close to call. I mean, I'm probably pretty much in that too close to call range, even if I gave a little bit better star rating to the 60-minute draw, in part because I'm just partial to 60-minute draws, and I found it historically significant and kind of ballsy to do it. But it's one of those kind of intangible, you know, tipping points that could go either way. I loved tonight's match. I mean, it was – I talked about the photography aspect of it earlier as just one thing that struck me as the art of the visuals. But the story they told, the callbacks to the first match, the callbacks to the first half of the match when Hangman started giving Danielson a piece of his own mind games – and it was just really sharp, you know, well executed. I'm sure that people voting for this match, there's probably not a ton who are like hating on the first match by saying that. It's just, you know, this match obviously is more of a crowd pleaser broadly because it was about a half hour as opposed to twice that long.
Yeah, and I'm glad that you brought up the. Looks like we had the delay today. I'm glad you brought up the in-between moments because I was actually thinking about it today because today I watched the fourth, Wrestle Kingdom on the fourth. So, and I actually had that thought because I have not actually watched New Japan since the G1. I just haven't had, you know, the time to really get into it because, you know, work and, you know, being Christmas time. But the, you know, getting back to it, I was really like enjoying, cause I had missed, the like the acting that they do in the ring, the facial acting, the them like, you know, reacting to what they're doing. There's a moment in the Shingo Okada match. I'm not going to give spoilers because, you know, since I'm late watching, I'm not going to mess up for people. But there is one moment in the match where Shingo taunts Okada with his own taunt, and Okada got really angry. And it's those little, like, acting moments where the camera like zooms in on the wrestler and you can see him reacting to what the other person just did, that to me like adds a lot to my enjoyment of New Japan. And I felt that in this match too, that there was a lot of moments where, you know, the acting in the ring and in the between stuff that made the match seem like more like they're telling a story, which kind of felt like it was missing in the actual, you know, final match in the tag team match. And I think that's why some people, you know, are not as fond of that, because it didn't have what that first match had.
Javier, anything else you want to bring up from the show that we didn't cover? By the way, I thought this was one of the top tier Dynamite start to finish. It just felt like historically significant, really good wrestling, some good mic work, well-paced, efficient and smartly worked, with the exception of a few dangerous moves, one of which, you know, obviously cost Rey Fénix big time. I thought this was a really, really good start for TBS, and a signature show that Tony Khan could kind of circle as one that he should be most proud of. Are you that high in it, or do you think it was just one of, you know, dozens and dozens of good ones?
I thought it was good. Maybe not super, you know, not as high as you sound, but I definitely thought it was a really good one. The one thing that stood out, I understand they were doing it more to like catch maybe a new audience, with the switch over to TBS, make an impact for it. So it did have like it had a feel of one of their big shows. And it was noticeable in the fact of like really the lack of vignettes that they've been doing a really good job with previously, with the exception of the Serena Deeb one. It's the only one that really pops to in the Cole one, you know, which was all stuff that was basically setting up Rampage anyway. In that respect, you know, it felt like it was more of like this is like our like TV pay-per-view episode, and I thought it was good for that, and I did like it a lot. And you know, with the stories and stuff that they were telling, I was fine with, you know, the Jade Cargill stuff. It was fine, and I gotta listen back to the post show I did with Tyler Sage on the Rampage one, because that's when we first talked about, you know, who was going to win the tournament. I think, because I remember I had her as an early favorite. I don't know if I mentioned it in that show, because I think I might have chickened out. But she was a wrestler who made sense, because she was the one that had she's the one who was being built up. I didn't think that Thunder Rosa would have been at, because she, you know, her ultimate destiny is Britt Baker, and it was really between her and Ruby were the two, and of course they ended up being in the final. And I like the idea of giving the Jade, because it helps to elevate her. Ruby can just go on and then start feuding with Britt, which it looks like might be something that happens coming up soon.
Mike, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of agree with everything there. You know, I think that there's a plan here. I mean, Tony doesn't do anything without a plan. That's been, I think, evident over the last 2 years. Both with the way he's booked the world title on the men's side and even the women's title. I mean, he's talked about how the plan for the first four world champions and how he's executed it, and even Britt Baker, her path to the women's world title. I think everything he does, you can't accuse him of doing anything without purpose. So whatever the idea he has here for this story moving forward, it's probably been an idea that he has had for a while. And while I'm sure you could alter it, you could adjust, and you can kind of pivot based upon how it's playing out over the course of several weeks, I think we're going to see something that is very, very detailed, because at the end of the day, most of what he does is very detail oriented, which I prefer. I think a lot of people do.
Yes. Yes. Cool. Javier, anything you want to plug or any follow up on AEW?
Well,
I don't need to cut you off. Yeah.
Well, I do have one question, because, when they were down here from Miami, which when they debuted Malakai Black, they started turning the lights off in a hunt throughout the show. before he made his appearance. They made, I think in commentary, they made it seem like, oh, you know, there's weather in the area and that's why the power's going out. It felt like they were doing something similar because there was the Malachi, you know, I mean, one of them was like Malachi basically teleporting away from the people attacking, but then there was another one later on the show, which didn't have any payoff either. So, it seems like
they
might, any idea what that might be? Yeah.
Yeah, I don't.
I don't have any idea what it might be, but I have to say I laughed so hard. You could just tell how much JR hates that. just in the way he said it. I think he said, like, the lights have been out a little too many times for my liking tonight or something like that, like right after it happened. And you could just hear the disdain in his voice for how much he hates the lights going out and coming back on again. So I did get a kick out of that.
Javier, I'll read an email that we got on this topic from Paul from Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada. He says, "Hi, Wade. In the past few weeks, we've had the opportunity to experience Dynamite with Jim Ross, both present and not. One thing that stood out to me tonight is Jim's lack of inflection or urgency when calling near falls during the Danielson Page match. Also noteworthy was Jim actively criticizing the looser rules during the Tag Team Championship match. I have lots of respect for Jim and his place in wrestling history. However, do you feel his current effort is helping or hindering the AEW product? Appreciate the feedback. Take care and stay safe." Mike, how did you feel about Dynamite without JR, and how do you feel about him now that he's back, and including the particular that we didn't bring up, which is how he did in that world title match? Because that's when you really want your announcers to really shine. And there was some criticism earlier of how they were a little too light with the TBS title match.
I think Andrew and I have talked a lot about this over the last couple of months, and I don't know that him full time in the announce booth moving forward is the best fit for him. And I think there is a lack of energy to, I guess is how you could describe it. Trying to be as respectful as possible, obviously. But I think he just had a birthday. I think he just turned 70, didn't he?
Yeah,
recently.
Yeah.
So I mean,
I think Monday.
Yeah. So he's not a young guy, you know, and I think that's a difficult job, you know, being out there for 2 hours in a high pressure live television situation week after week is a taxing job. I personally think where he kind of shines the best, I think he does a really good job of those sit down interviews, kind of like what he did with Serena Deeb tonight. He's done other ones in the past too. Those more long form interviews where he's sitting across from somebody. I think he's really good at that. I'd like to see him brought in for special occasions, like for tonight, right? Maybe you just bring him in for the world title match or something, and make his voice sound, make his voice a special attraction more than an every week thing. I also don't like the 3-man commentary team. I just think it's overcrowded.
Oh, I thought you were going to say you want four. That's what Tony's always looking for, the fourth guy.
No, yeah, I know. No, that's even more overcrowded. I think three's a little too much. So I would kind of like to see him transition into some other role. I'm not saying you can't use him. He's definitely still someone who can be a valuable asset to the company. I just think as an everyday play-by-play guy, it's not a great fit. Because the other thing, too, is you kind of have three play-by-play guys. You get three guys that are all kind of doing the same thing. They're all calling the moves. They're all kind of taking turns being the play-by-play guy. You don't really have a true color guy there. You know, I'd like to see, ideally, probably Excalibur, and then someone that's an ex-wrestler who can be, not to keep going back to the UFC, but who could be the Daniel Cormier, you know, in the booth, who can kind of explain when a move, this is what, and Excalibur does it a little bit, somebody who can kind of break down the action in a believable way, because you know he's been in the ring. Like, I think Daniel Cormier is really good on the UFC broadcast, talking about, okay, this guy, he has him in this type of hold. Now, for this guy to get out of it, this is what he has to do. He's trying to get his wrist here. You can see how he's holding on to his elbow or whatever. You know, he's explaining to you what they're doing as they're doing it. And they don't really have a guy like that. You know, they've just got three play-by-play guys there. So I do think there's a shakeup there needed. And if you're going to shake it up at all, I would try to find a different role for JR. Honestly, I would even try to find a different role for Tony. I think Tony is kind of the 2022 version of Mean Gene doing post-match interviews would be really good. I think he's really good at that. Yeah. So I would like, ideally, in an ideal world, I think Excalibur is a pretty good play-by-play guy. Him with someone on color who it was an ex-wrestler would be my ideal booth, with Tony doing pre- and post-match interviews kind of on the ramp or in the ring, and then JR, the more longer-form sit-down interviews in the back. And you could even do it where you make sure you have one of those segments a week. It doesn't have to be 15 minutes, but one of those interviews a week for JR to do, so he's still a continuous presence on the show.
Yeah, I think part of, you know, the three-man booth and having three play-by-play people is what plays into the announcers not really knowing what role they should have to amplify near falls. You know, whose turn is it? Who's taking it? So, you know, that can play into it. I think there's just – it's sort of, you know, the announcing by committee, there's not that person who just feels solely responsible for a certain – for that specific role, and it might, you know, still not be Jim Ross's comfort zone.
And there's guys that are going to be on the market too. I mean, we don't know what's going on with Ring of Honor. I mean, I've been a fan of Ian Riccoboni. I'd like to see him come in and do something, whether it's a play-by-play guy for Rampage or Dynamite, and Excalibur moves to Rampage, because I think Excalibur and Taz are pretty good together. You know, there's a lot of talent out there, where whether it's adding somebody or just kind of reshuffling the deck with what they have, I think they do need to reshape it somehow.
Javier, anything else for us?
Well, on that, I've actually grown to like JR since when he first started in Dynamite, but I think that when it comes to matches like that, then he really needs to lay off on the criticism, because I always prefer, you know, if there's something you don't like about it, don't like crap on it, just try explain it away, because you know that lack of you know, it's come up a few times, the lack of the tag counts and stuff like that. That happens, you know, that's like the New Japan tag style. And you know, and Kevin Kelly explained that you know, that Red Shoes, and I know you just finished talking about way that, you know, swallow the whistle during big matches. You don't like hearing that, but that's pretty much the way that, he explained it, that, you know, he wants to make sure that there's an actual victor. And so he gives the wrestlers, some leeway. You know, so that, you know, so he at least explains, because then it's consistent match to match, you know, so that was kind of the, you know, and I'd rather him, you know, instead of like complaining, oh, why is this person, you know, posing, finish the match, you know, you're trying to get he's trying to get the energy from the crowd. Because that's what they used to say for Hulk Hogan. When Hulk Hogan started, you know, drawing from the crowd, that's what the commentary team would say, is that he's gaining energy from the crowd to, you know, so he can finish this guy off. You know, that I prefer the commentary saying that than saying, why is he wasting time?
Yeah, I mean, you know, fair enough. It just, you know, I just rather call matches that didn't have that as a spot. Mike?
Yeah, no, I think there's room for storytelling elements within that too. Like you said, whether it's just, I don't think you should say the referee's got to, you know, as we said earlier, the game's the game. You know, the rules should be the rules. A referee shouldn't put the whistle away in the last 2 minutes of a hockey game and just let the guys kill each other just because it's the last 2 minutes of the game. If it was a penalty in the second period, it should be a penalty with a minute left. But I do think that there's also an element of, like, you look at baseball and umpires, and everything's subjective. And on the broadcast, you'll hear broadcasters talk about how, you know, well, so-and-so is behind the plate tonight, and he traditionally has a pretty wide strike zone, so the game can be played differently. As long as they're consistent, I mean, there's no reason why I don't think you could say, if you're AEW, the referee's in charge of the matches, right? So the broadcasters could say, so-and-so is reffing tonight, and he's got the tag team match that we're seeing right now, and traditionally, you know, he doesn't really enforce the five count, which could play into as an advantage for Pentagon and Phoenix or something. As long as whoever they have in that role, whoever the referee is, as long as they are consistently doing the same thing. You know, you don't want to see a guy ignore it tonight because that's just what they want the match to be, and then next week all of a sudden he's enforcing it. There needs to be a consistency there, but I think ultimately, just like the officials, referees, umpires, whoever, are in charge of the individual games, you can't change the rules, but there are some leeway sometimes. Sometimes there's NHL referees that call less penalties than others. There's guys that are more strict than other guys. There's leeway, I think, within that in wrestling, too, as long as it's consistent, because that's the one thing with those types of things, whether you're talking about an umpire or an NHL referee, those guys are consistent. I mean, you'll hear talked about during the games, you know, that this crew calls the least amount of penalties in the league or whatever it is. So it just needs to be consistent week to week.
Yep. All right. Javier, anything else you want to bring up or plug?
No. I mean, there's more stuff I can say, you know, with Mike here, but I need to get to bed so I could, you know, wake up, go to work, and then watch wrestling while I should be working.
Yeah.
That's a really plug right now, but you know, but have a good night, guys, and again, Happy New Year, and good talking to you again, Mike.
Thanks, too.
All right, cool. Mike, we've gone really long. I said we had some emails. I'm kind of going through them to see if there's anything that isn't that I've been trying to keep up while listening to the show, but also keep up on if there's anything that we didn't bring up that is worth jumping in with here. Well, what did you think of the Serena Deeb segment? Because we didn't talk about that, the sit-down with Jim Ross.
Yeah.
Because I'll actually read Zach's email on it here. He brings up a few things. He said, way to Mike, it was quite the bloody violent war between Paige and Danielson, quite the statement win for Hangman, and I hope Danielson's blood transfusion was successful. In other news, the women's division is on fire. Jade Cargill is an unbeatable monster on, dare I say, a Goldberg-esque run, but as a heel. And so, great minds think alike, Zach. Mercedes Martinez and Thunder Rosa are going to have some matches that I can't wait to see. Absolutely true. Serena Deeb saying she, quote, has a PhD in this shit, popped me. I would gladly watch her and Sheeta throw down in the next week and once a month. Ruby continues to play her plucky, beloved underdog role well, and I can't wait till she finally wins that first title. Anna, Ty, Bunny, Penelope tried to murder each other last week. Oh, and then there's Britt Baker. Remember when this division was a joke? What a marvelous turnaround. So we covered a lot of what he brought up there, but the Serena Deeb segment was interesting.
Yeah, I was a big fan of it. I mean, it was one of the first times that she really got to talk in a meaningful way, you know, other than just something quick before a match or after a match. And I think JR shines in these type of segments too, like I just said earlier, but it really brought out a different side of her character. Like, I don't remember her getting that sort of time to kind of state what her goals are and just talk, just give herself a voice. You know what I mean? It's very rare that a wrestler on Rampage or Dynamite, where it's so action packed and everything is so tight, because they don't have a lot of time. 3 hours sounds like a lot of time, but when the roster's as deep as it is now, it really isn't. I thought it was good. I thought that took her to another level. I've always been interested in her, but I definitely came away from that segment more interested in her than I was before.
Yeah. Yeah. And I just, you know, she's talking about her years of experience. Like, one thing AEW has an advantage over WWE is they're just going to push people without them fitting like one of two specific looks and body types and ages. And Serena Deeb just carries herself with this like intense chip on shoulder credibility on the mic in a way tonight that I thought really like worked for her. And then just in the ring, she's someone you can just put out there with just about anybody and get a good match. So, you know, I'm happy that she's, you know, getting this opportunity.
I would kind of compare it to Danielson coming in on the men's side, like very similar, really experienced wrestler, who's drawing on that experience and isn't afraid to talk about it, about their experience. You can put them in the ring with just about anybody and know you're going to get a pretty good match. You can do that with Serena Deeb on the women's side. You can do it with Danielson on the men's side. So obviously Danielson comes in with a little more star power, but in a very similar position in kind of where they are character-wise.
Yeah. There was a decent amount of emails actually on commentary tonight. Going back to that for a minute, Mike. James B., a VIP member from Mount Juliet, Tennessee, said, I really want to hear your opinions on the commentary of the World Title Match tonight. With only a couple of exceptions from Excalibur, Tony Schiavone showed the most enthusiasm on the announce team. I rate Jim Ross as the greatest announcer of all time, and I really, really want to like his work these days. But he doesn't seem to be able to bring any energy to his work anymore. I've been able to follow JR from the days when things were breaking down in Tulsa and Mid-South UWF. He used to get fired up and just froth at the mouth during a big match and near falls, but he just doesn't show that same enthusiasm. Maybe he's been feeling 100% after his cancer treatments. Maybe he doesn't have the same energy at his age. Maybe he's not engaged in the product. Excalibur had the best analysis of the match. Tony Schiavone brought the most enthusiasm. Jim Ross brought his name. The forced plugs from Excalibur during a world title match felt out of place, too. I understand needing to promote other things coming later in the show, so maybe the title match should have main evented, even though that's not how AEW lays out big matches on free TV. And on a completely unrelated note, what's up with the awful dye job on Chris Jericho's hair? Thanks for all the great content. So, yeah, just to kind of back up, you know, other people have called and emailed about it. It did jump out to people about Ross.
Yeah, and I think it's been something that's been – it's been evident for a while, and I'm not trying to pile on the guy because, like I said, he just went through a pretty rigorous health treatment and is also 70 years old. I mean, I wouldn't have the energy to do the type of travel that's required to do weekly television. I get annoyed just going to the airport. So I can't imagine, you know, what it's like at his age, also with the treatment that he just went through. I mean, I remember he detailed it on Twitter, I think, at one point. It was 20-something treatments or whatever he did. It was pretty exhausting, I'm sure. So I'm trying not to be too critical, but at the same time, like, it does come across as there being a lack of energy there for whatever the reason is. And I do think you would like to just make sure there's a spot for him on the show. I think it's going to make sure you utilize him in a way that is best for the company, but also best for him.
Mike, anything else you want to add from the show before I wrap up?
No, I don't think so. I think we covered pretty much everything, right? I can't think of anything we really missed.
Yeah. Cool. Well, talk about your show a little bit. Sell people on it if they haven't checked it out yet.
Yeah, so it's still technically called the All Elite After Show, even though we were doing it before now. We were joking the other week that even though we're before Dynamite, we're technically after Rampage. So it's still technically an after show, just a few days after.
Yeah. We'll add that to the graphic in small print. Put an asterisk. A few days after.
But Andrew Sochek and I have been doing a show, I think, since January of 2016. I think that's when we started. And we started with Impact. We were on after Impact on Thursday nights forever. And then Impact's schedule got bounced around. They were going at midnight at one point, and Andrew and I were both like, we're not doing shows at 1 in the morning. We still talk about Impact, but then we started talking about AEW because it was right around the same time. So we have a show every week. We talk about the news of the week. You know, we definitely will talk about the previous week's Dynamite and Rampage and kind of how it will affect the upcoming show, the shows that we're going to see that week, because we usually drop, like you said earlier, before Dynamite. So we preview what's coming up. We kind of tie it in with what's already happened. And then if there's any big news stories, we'll talk about those as well. So it's a lot of fun. You can email us, alleliteaftershow@gmail.com. And, we've been doing it for quite – we were talking about this a couple of nights ago. We've been doing this for a very long time, which is crazy. Like, we've had
37
people,
years.
That's what it feels like, yeah. we had someone that emailed us a couple of weeks ago that were like, oh, how long have you guys known each other? And we had said, like, well, we've never met in person. And they're like, what? Yeah. They're like, oh, yeah, well, we've never met at all. We've only ever done this online. We've never actually met. We didn't know each other until we started doing the show together. And people were like, no way. Like, I assumed you guys were, like, friends and have been watching wrestling, like, since you were, you know, teenagers together, because we're roughly the same age. And I said, nope, yeah. We've never met. We've never met. So it's
that's the case, I think, with a good number of our podcast, pairings at the Torch. I often – you know, matchmake and try to match who I think will be good personalities playing off each other with similar interests. You guys are really fun to listen to. It's been fun, you know, seeing the dynamic develop and it works.
We have fun with it. Yeah. So you can check us out. Like I said, email us if you want to email us. We make sure we get to all those every week too. So don't be afraid to send us an email and tell us how wrong you think we are. We have plenty of people to do that. Or how
yep,
right hey. You think we are. That doesn't happen all the time. But every once in a while, people agree with us.
Yep. Well, awesome. So search PW Torch or just go to pwtorch.com and look for the link there. We went long. I kind of figured we would on a show like this, but we didn't even get to all the emails. I am going to one way or the other get those emails on the air, and I might do a mailbag on tomorrow's Blue Logo show. Or I might incorporate it into the Focus on AEW VIP exclusive show. One way or the other, you will be heard, you will be read. We'll get to those. Mike, it's been great. Let's do this more than every year and a half.
Sounds good. Yeah, I agree.
All right.
Thanks for
take care.
Me.
Thanks so much to our callers and emailers too, and our on-site correspondent. Oh, and Javier, you're still here. Thank you. Thank you too. Okay, maybe he's not. All right. We're out here.
Cool.